There can be no other 97.3. No need to change. Keep it tuned to City. You're number one. Don't look no further. We've got it all covered. City FM.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, my neighbor.
Good morning to life.
Good morning.
Music. Talk. Inspiration. In perspective.
Express yourself.
Good morning, my neighbor.
City FM, your station.
It's a refreshing lifestyle.
City FM.
97.3. Unleashing the power of radio. This is City.
Money.
26 minutes past 6, 18th April 2024. Stella Seal Dugan Okrayemu Tisoko Dianinimba. He's watching over us. He protects and preserves us. Like the hawk, no, like the hen and the chicks. Starting the show with a spot of music, not just to put you in the mood, but also to remind you of the faithfulness of the Lord. I'm going to give you four quick things to know about learning. When you're asked what work you do, there are two ways to answer. You can talk about your sector or your profession, but you can also talk about your approach. So even though I'm a journalist, I'm a lifelong learner. Learn from everything, every situation, every occasion, from everyone. So a few things about learning. Humility is the spirit of learning. You will not learn anything if you have a proud attitude. Number two, reality is the foundation to learning. You need to face reality. Many people refuse to accept the facts and the truth, and therefore they can't learn. Number three, responsibility is the first step to learning. Accept responsibility, that you are responsible for your own learning. You can be taught in a class by a teacher, but it's your learning, that it's your responsibility to learn. So while teaching occurs in a classroom, learning occurs everywhere. And number four, expect problems. They are opportunities for learning. So humility is the spirit of learning. Reality is the foundation for learning. Responsibility is the first step towards learning. And then problems are opportunities for learning. The only way to test if you've learned something is to solve a problem. So engineering, for example, is not just a classroom thing. You're sent into the lab, the studio, to now prove what you've learned. So develop the learner's mindset. By the way, eagle is Aquarius eagle. Thank you, Sika, for that correction. Not a hen, the eagle. Okrayemu tiso Aquarius nimba. Business Sense brought to you by ADB. We're offering you a variety of personal loans, including top-ups at highly reduced interest rate. Enjoy longer tenors of up to 6 years, and offer open to non-customers as well. Call 0302-210-210. ADB, the People's Bank. ADB, truly a Greek and more.
This is the City Breakfast Show, the city's biggest conversation.
Unleashing the power of relevant radio. This is City 97.3.
What told me put on my tongue for the memory of me and the dasso? What saw me sat the mitrapo, cocoa with Yamakwanso? Sesenya me, what dasso tiasi dia, we need that one so. Tete what time, why you be paying, what dasso jina the naso? And for we need to yasi, we yanko on the tiasi. We did the neighbor shiasi, pretty as and we need the grassy. Nipa bestro na, when you should cry, na ye chewasi. Need your name, we bunko to Jaka, senya meme dasi. Senior can see it to me, but dead in Tino. And so I be brave, but also Kai be a Wufino. Yachida would do see be feeling, and so we're down with Chino. The vampire when Sabbath, how would you hear with Demo? Over the Bepon Bed.
So I know the Beba and Mawa Bamumbo. Tina Pindin and Mawa comment. There were the new Tunan and Yamiso adding in Edguano. If he any, so I know the Beba and Mawa Bamumbo. Tina Pindin and Mawa comment. Yeah, what did you want to nanny? I'm so I didn't know.
You've been looking for someone to take your sorrows all away. One to hold you tight and say, everything's gonna be okay. Christ, I'm proud of praying now. My money, who now will never be. And yet, the night will be tried. Hold on to your faith.
there will be a brighter day, brighter day, brighter day.
On the City Breakfast Show.
There will be a brighter day, brighter day.
There will definitely be a brighter day, Sakodie, with a brafo to resuscitate your morning, give you hope for today, expectations for tomorrow. City Breakfast Show is live at 6:33. Newspaper review segment brought to you by Total Energies. A breakthrough innovation has been released. It's called the Quartz Engine Oil with ART. It improves your engine efficiency and protection by up to 74%. And Quartz, keep your engine younger for longer. Don't wait for days for transactions to clear. No more expensive fees, just fast, secure, and affordable payments. Because PAPS is partnering Fidelity Bank to help you send money to your loved ones across the continent. Nigeria, Liberia, Gambia, Guinea, Sierra Leone. Same currency instantly, no extra charges. Fidelity Bank, believe with us.
There will be a brighter day, brighter day.
Sing good morning to my brothers, Richard Sky, Nathan Kwa.
Hello.
I know you love this song.
There's a line in the song that I like so much.
Talk to me.
He says, I say Nyankopon yen senchene na minti wasi. And then he says Bunyaye for senchene ni se udasu tiasi.
Wow. The miracle is that you evil person, you are still living.
He says, oh God, give me a miracle. And God says, you evil person, the miracle is that you are still living.
I like that.
Bunyaye for like you're an ungrateful person.
The fact that you are still alive,
it's the miracle.
So don't ask for any new one.
The very first day I heard the song, that line stayed. It's a very, very deep line.
You know, when Sakodie and Obrafo get together, good things happen. You understand what you are saying?
Yeah, that's right. As for the miracle, it will come.
Trials.
But make your heart no worries. No,
make you
no
shit.
Don't lose hope.
No. Check back. I go pass over.
Anyhow, so we have so many things to do. Welcome to the show. Great to have you. It's Thursday morning, 18th April.
It is
18th April.
April is running marathon.
Oh, yeah, who is
moving fast? Next week we are in the 20s.
Charlie. Yeah. This is on
wheel. Saturday is 20th.
Yeah, it's moving very fast. Charlie. You know, it's moving very fast. There are only some things that are not moving. As for the days, they are moving. It's the business that's not moving.
Everything locked. Places locked.
But we still thank God. Listen to the song.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
There's a brighter day.
Yeah. The fact that we are alive is enough miracle.
I'm telling you. Well, so give us the Ghanaian Times.
We keep the faith. The Ghanaian Times says this morning, 9-party alliance for revolutionary change to contest 2024 polls. Alan Cash leads the pack. Also on the front page this morning, we're told two UK museums return Asante royal objects. Well, this story has been in the news for the past good. I don't know.
They brought it. I think the paper just tried to put it out this morning because the story came over the weekend.
Ghanaian Times, please always be on time. And then also, President Akufo-Addo Asantehene inaugurates key energy projects in Asante region.
I protest.
Okay.
this is not a time-bound story necessarily. No. So the story, they brought the things.
I put it inside.
Yeah, so they've decided
put it
to
inside
air today.
The inside
it's, no, it's the air today. It's just it leave them. Okay. The way you're going, it's not good. No confusion. Daily Graphic.
The Daily Graphic says, GJA 75th anniversary launch. Journalists must be fearless, says Sam Jonah is speaking.
Okay.
Ministry invites proposals for Saglemi housing project. And our form first representative government in nation's history, Alan pledges. And on the back page of the Daily Graphic is a story that emerged yesterday, but they've given a very vivid account.
Mm-hmm.
Man arraigned for robbing Mrs. Emisa Arthur and others.
This man.
Let me take you to the finder. RFP for Saglemi issued. Also, we are told Asantehene urges government to allow private investment in ECG, GRIDCO, and the Volta River Authority. Also this morning, we are told President commissions 150-megawatt plant to stabilize power supply in Ashanti region. And the story about Alan also makes the front page.
All right. The Daily Guide says, four caged over missing EC equipment. Tamale delegation visits Munster to strengthen ties. Nana appoints new accountant general and let's support women. That's coming from Dr. Balmia.
The Chronicle says this morning, red flags at Supremo Timbers. Workers send SOS to government to protect concessions. And you can see some workers here demonstrating on the front page of the paper. Alan to contest again presidential election on ARC ticket. Government issues request for proposal for Saglami housing units. And then GBG, or CBG actually, does not owe government of Ghana management again. We brought you the story yesterday or 2 days ago.
Okay, the Daybreak newspaper has a lot of the stories we've already mentioned. But in terms of the EC story, they've given a further level, or they've given a bit more detail. EC staff student caged over missing laptops.
And let me take you to the Daily Post newspaper. You will account for your deeds. Mahama wants Akufo-Addo's officials. Also, Joycelyn Tete donates 100 bags of cement to Vakpo Senior High School. That's in her constituency. And court remands man for robbing former second lady, as you mentioned earlier.
All right, finally for me, the Anchor newspaper says, allow private sector participation in VRA, ECG, Gridco, and others. Otunfo Advocate says diversification is the way to go.
It's divestiture. Well, you know, it's not the same thing.
Yeah, I think it should be divestiture.
So not to divestify.
Yes. Other stories. Comatose PNC splits. What a description. Top execs break away to form new party. And then there's the robbery story on the concerning the former second lady, and then 42 million trees planted in 3 years under Green Ghana initiative.
Okay, let me take you online. So many stories as well. If you go to citynewsroom.com, couple of headlines. It's a shame Galamsey issues no longer make headlines. This is Sam Jonah. He also spoke about Ghana's journalists and the democracy. He says, speak up against threats to our democracy. This was at the 75th anniversary of the GJA. In other stories, Doomso, I acknowledge your patience. Challenges will be resolved. The president is pledging. Meanwhile, IMF says AI is likely to affect 40% of global workforce. Saglami housing project will not be left to rot. This is Kojo Oponkrumah speaking on the point of view. And he also says that affordable housing project, we are fast tracking 8,000 homes at Pokuase. In other headlines, NLC gives NAT others 2 weeks to conclude negotiations with government. And then PNC dismisses reports of mass resignations and denounces the formation of a new political party. Those are all City Newsroom stories. If you go to my journal online, why should politicians take credit for VRA's work? Dr. Manthea fumes over power plant relocation fanfare. Meanwhile, give true meaning to Yanara Asasini. It's not just a song. Sam Jonah tells journalists, we hear you, sir. In other stories, we want LGBT bill signed. Ghana Baptist Convention to the president. And Otunfo to government, allow private sector participation in ECG, Gridco, to make them viable. You read that earlier on. And then change Maslock into a digital learning platform. Citizens Movement Against Corruption is urging. Star FM's lead story, same story on Maslock. MOF Maslock board can't be left off the hook in misappropriated funds. Harry Amson is speaking. Also, why outdoor a 9-year-old baby? PV fires Akufo-Addo over commission of Ameri plant in Kumasi. The baby is 9. He's still in diapers. Then Otunfo's admonishment to government. Don't hang on to industries you can't maintain or run. I think that's a very wise call indeed. Class FM's lead story. Let's diversify VRA ECG. Otunfo tells government. Also, Kwesi Ejeyi appointed new controller and accountant general. His photograph is there. And then Sam Jonah says, lack of public press protection is pathetic. Sam Jonah calls out weaponization of the state. Let me give you a few headlines across Africa. China writes off interest-free loans given to Zimbabwe. So they are getting some relief from China. U.S. sanctions 4 former Malawi officials over corruption. That's also coming from the East African. UN raises over $600 million to boost aid to Ethiopia. You know, there's a trouble in Ethiopia as well.
Yep.
Now, if you go to Bloomberg, Netanyahu is caught between hitting Iran and heeding allies. So that's the corner that he's in. Then there's a very interesting feature here. You know, this is Nathan's people. Gabon. Africa's oldest rich dictatorship has a succession problem. And the photograph is of This is Equatorial Guinea, actually.
Equatorial Guinea.
And the man has done Jerry. Do you know Pemi? The man has Pemi, his hair is went dark.
The
son of the Equatorial Guinea president. He's done Pemi.
Mm-hmm.
And he has done a boy in the Pemi. He's wearing dark shades. Oh, God. Oh, God. Reuters is also leading with issues around the world. Greek economy surges after decades of pain. Indonesian volcano eruption forces evacuations and airport closures. All kinds of things, gentlemen. Yep. All kinds of things. BBC. The West says China makes too much. Its workers disagree. Ukraine warns of World War III ahead of stalled U.S. aid vote. Hey, World War III. Ukraine.
People chop where they don't have anything to do with their life.
Let's get into the details.
Okay, let me take you to Kumasi. Mm. Now, the Ghanaian Times has the story on page 8. We're talking about the Ameri power plant that appears to have been renamed. And the story is from Kingsley E. Hope and says that President Nana Addo Dankwa Akufo-Addo and Asante Hene Otumfuo Setutu II yesterday inaugurated two key energy projects in the Ashanti region to enhance energy supply to the middle and northern belts of the country. Now, the projects are the 110-kilometer natural gas pipeline constructed by Gensa Energy in the Ejusu municipality and the 250-megawatts Africa and Middle East resource investment, which is Ameri Thermal Plant, now rechristened or christened Kumasi One Thermal Plant, which is K1TPP. Now, the pipelines, made up of 12,000 steel pipes, will drive the full exploitation of local gas resources to connect the Ejisu plant metering station to serve the 250-megawatts thermal plant. Now, it is expected to generate a minimum of 250 megawatts of power required in the Ashanti region to guarantee reliability and stability in the national grid.
So now, tell us what Otumfuo has been saying at that program. We know the facts of the commissioning.
But well, this is in the Anchor newspaper. Kwame Sapong writes that the Asante Hene has urged government to allow private sector participation in the management of state-owned enterprises to ensure efficiency and sustainability in order to create more jobs for the growth of the country's economy. And according to the revered chief, state institutions like the ECG, Gridco VRA and others should be partly managed by the private sector to rake in the needed revenue.
Well, I think just make a quick comment. Look, we know that under the Ameri deal, the project, the facility becomes ours over time, right? If you move it to the Ashanti region, did we need all the fanfare, you know, inaugurating? I think I feed into the NDC's argument that...
So it's not the NDC. Let me give you two... Let me give you two stories
to take
on,
the thing
on
away
that.
From there. It's not fair, I don't
So this is from Steve Mantiel. Steve Mantiel is saying, why should politicians take credit for VRA's work? He fumes over power plant relocation fanfare. So Steve Mantiel, we know, co-chair of the GAITI, which is the Ghana Extractive Industry Transparency Initiative, has called for the dilution of government control over state enterprises in the energy sector. This comes after the NDC criticized the president over the renaming of the American. Right, then there's a gentleman called PV. All right. He's also photographed. Former presidential staff under the Estuwa John Mahama administration, PV Jantua Boateng Datsun, has also hit the government for a decision to commission the 9-year-old Ameri plant. Now, there's something else I was said there that I don't want us to miss. The president is asking for patience.
From who?
For you, so that the doomsaw will go.
Really?
I acknowledge your patience. Challenges will be resolved. So this is a president who was wearing yellow. Now, President Akufo-Addo has openly acknowledged the recent power supply challenges, assuring the nation of government's unwavering commitment to resolving the issues at hand, expressing gratitude for the patience exhibited by Ghanaians during his recent power cuts. The president reassures citizens of ongoing efforts to mitigate the challenges. I do acknowledge, Minister of Energy, ladies and gentlemen, and Nanano, the challenges that the people of Ashanti and indeed other parts of the country have had to endure in the recent times over their supply of power. And I can only thank you for your patience who have exhibited in the face of these challenges.
You know how nailing this statement is?
Yes, it nails a lot
of
people.
It nails a lot of people.
He has acknowledged that there's a problem. Let's move to Sam Jonah. He's also nailing.
Before that, though, let me just draw your attention, still in the Ashanti region, to the Chronicle's editorial for this morning. They are saying, arrest of ECG manager. Is the Ashanti regional minister not abusing his powers? If you're interested in that particular editor, please grab a copy. It's a very interesting read.
Okay.
Let's
get to the second story. Yes, Sam Jonah spoke at GJ's 75th anniversary launch.
He's on the front page and on page 3 of the Daily Graphic. Mm. And he has called on journalists to be fearless, courageous, and not compromise when defending the national interest.
All right.
Now, Sam Jonah is the CEO of Jonah Capital.
Yep.
And he stressed that the success of the country's democratic path would depend critically or crucially on how free the press was. He was speaking at the launch of the 75th anniversary of the GJA, and he stated that the GJA was more than a collective of individuals, but a symbol of the nation's resilience, aspirations, and unwavering pursuit of progress.
He also said it's a shame that Galamsey issues no longer make front pages. The senior statesman lamented the lack of attention from the media despite significant harm and destruction caused by illegal mining activities to the livelihoods of Ghanaians and society as a whole. In his address at the anniversary, he says, "I wish I could be confident that the coverage will be professional, but I'm afraid I can't, given the largely unserious way in which another important national issue, the most egregious abuse of the rights of millions, whose livelihoods have been decimated completely by Galamsey operations, has been treated by your profession." Well, I can say we are back on the Galamsey trail. For the past 2 months, we've done a Galamsey, at least on the point of view. We've highlighted it. We are showing the videos. What else can we do? We show, we tell, we discuss. The government has to act. Yes. That's what has to happen. Cocoboard held a press conference commenting about the effects of Galamsey, even on Coco. So the noise is there. It's just that sometimes the authorities decide what to focus on. We can only comment. We can only make noise. What else can we do? Let's move to the next story.
Yeah, so still within the space on livelihoods, there's a story on page 5 of the Chronicle, the lead story, actually.
Mm-hmm.
It's by Sebastian R. Feku in the Ahafo main area.
Mm.
And he says, employees of Supremo Wood Processing Limited at Bediako Chrome, near Mim in the Sunafo North Municipality of the Ahafo region, have protested against invasion of the company's legally acquired concessions by illegal chainsaw operators without restraint.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the company, established in 2017, has acquired 50 compartments from the Forestry Commission and engaged over 600 workforce to process plywood, sawmill, and furniture. Now, the compartments are spread over Bechem, Gosso, Doma, and Juaboso.
Hmm.
Unfortunately, about 14 of these compartments in the Bia Tano Forest and the Mpameso Forest Reserves are constantly being encroached upon by illegal chainsaw operators who are mostly armed, and they are doing so with impunity. Not even the company security unit and forest guards can ward off the invasion of the concessions. And basically, they are asking the government to come in to protect the concessions for them. Right. Otherwise, there will be trouble.
Before you come to Saglemi, let's go to Alan. So the ARC has endorsed Alan Chermating as presidential candidate. The Abuabian Samoa, a key member of the Movement for Change, has announced that Alan Chermating has received the endorsement of a group called the Alliance for Revolutionary Change as the presidential candidate for the upcoming December elections. Now, this ARC was inaugurated in Accra on Wednesday, April 17, aims to unite a variety of existing major parties, entities and movements and individuals. These groups will collaborate closely to participate in the 2024 elections. He said the alliance is open to everyone interested in moving beyond the duopoly of the NPP and the NDC.
So is he going to be an independent presidential candidate, or there will be a party form named AA?
That's a very good question.
Yeah. On page 13 of the Daily Graphic, he says he will lead a representative government.
Okay. No, I think that question has to be answered. But then the other issue is that within one of the parties, the PNC is going through some trouble, and they are dismissing reports of mass resignations. But we are told some of their leaders have resigned and formed a new group called the PNP. But the leadership of the PNC has dismissed these reports and basically said that the resignations are not that many. So yesterday, Umaru Sanda focused on this on Eyewitness News. Now, I wanted you to take me to Saglemi Housing.
Yes, page 13 of the Daily Graphic. Mm. And the Ministry of Works and Housing has called on private investors who are interested in assisting the government to complete and operationalize the Saglemi Affordable Housing Project to submit their proposals. Now, these proposals are expected between the 17th of April and the 8th of July, while the evaluation is slated for the 9th of July. Now, the contract is expected to be signed on the 30th of August to facilitate the beginning of the project completion.
Meanwhile, the minister has also said that the project will not be left to rot. He spoke on Point of View yesterday. He affirmed government's preparedness to explore opportunities for partnering with potential investors. He also said that they will fast track the Pukwasi 8,000 housing project, which sadly, even though it was launched last year, not a single block is in the ground. So the Minister for Works and Housing has outlined the government's efforts to address Ghana's housing challenge. He mentioned that they are expediting the construction of 8,000 units in Pukwasi and 320 homes in Tesano, specifically for security services. That's in case of the Tesano one.
Okay.
And he's basically saying that they are trying to fast track moves to get things done.
But now let's stay within the workspace, because page 4 of the Finder newspaper has a story. Group shows interest in Qatar Sea Defense and Lagoon dredging projects. And the story says the Hydrological, Environmental and Engineering Consulting Limited has paid courtesy call on Togbi Sri III, the Awamafia of the Anglo Duko in the Vulture region, to dialogue on the development of the enclave. Now, the visit was to present a funding proposal to him in expression of the firm's interest in investing in the coastal land reclamation and lagoon dredging projects in the Vulture region. Now, the project, which seeks to reclaim miles of land from the sea, construct sea defense wall to protect the reclaimed land, and dredge the Qatar Lagoon and its tributaries of silt for enhanced water life, will cover a vast area of approximately 1,800 kilometers square.
Now, let's deal with the...
It's a very good story, because consistently we've been telling the government to do something about that particular space.
All right.
Thus far, nothing has been done to deal with the problems there.
All right, let's deal with some security or crime-related stories. Two big ones are in the news. One has to do with the robbery.
Former First Lady.
Yes, former First Lady.
Second
now, that's
lady,
sorry, the former Second Lady. Sorry. That's on the back page of the Daily Graphic. And man arraigned for robbing Mrs. Emisa Arthur and others. Now, a gentleman named Yahuza Osmanu, he is in
He's not a gentleman, just a man.
Okay, sorry. Gentlemen don't misconduct themselves.
Man, like that. Gentleman.
So, yes, he was in court, or the High Court in Accra, for masterminding and robbing high-profile personalities of valuables. Besides robbing a 76-year-old woman at Ridge, he's alleged to have robbed Her Excellency Matilda Yaba Emisa Arthur by strangling her and hitting her head repeatedly with a gun. And he's also said to have robbed a few others of their valuables and all of that. Now, if you go to the back page of the Daily Graphic, the story is there, really interesting breakdown of how it all came together for the police to pick up this guy at Kaswa.
Okay. And then the second one is the...
Yes, it has to do with the Electoral Commission. Mm-hmm. Page 3 of the Daily Guide. And it says three employees of the EC and a student have been remanded into police custody over the theft of electronic equipment belonging to the commission. The EC officials who have been charged with one count of conspiracy to steal, two counts of stealing, while the student has been charged with one count of dishonestly receiving. Now, the chief inspector dealing with this case, Christopher Wanda, asked the court to remand the accused to prevent them from interfering with ongoing investigations into the theft. Now, a court document states that on March 9, officers of the ICT department of the EC began routine maintenance of BVR kits, and it goes on to detail how the kits were taken away and eventually...
Now, Sky, I want to give you something that you can elaborate on. Consumers to pay more as fuel prices surge in second pricing window. This is citynewsroom.com. Came in a couple of days ago. On Tuesday, April 16, several OMCs implemented price hikes for fuel, making the second pricing window of the month. Checked by City News at various OMC outlets revealed significant increase in fuel prices. For instance, state-owned GOIL raised the price of petrol to 14.99 cedis per liter from 14.15 in the previous pricing window, while diesel now sells for 14.80, up from 14.74. Now, the other story there is that fuel prices will exceed 17 cedis soon. COPEC is saying.
They should continue.
Duncan Amwa, executive secretary of the Chamber for Petroleum Consumers, has predicted that the price of fuel will soon surpass 16 cedis to 17 cedis. This follows Nana Mwesi, the seventh of the IES, forecasting a significant rise in fuel prices in the coming weeks during an interview on the City Breakfast Show on City FM.
They should continue. December 7 is coming. Better quickly, page 10 of the final has... I have mixed feelings about this. So, international business. Cocoa prices finished sharply lower on demand destruction concerns. So, prices are not looking good for us. We need a lot of money.
The prices have gone so much up.
Yeah, but...
The cocoa price rise in the past 6 months has been so high
that
even if they come down... We are not going to be affected that much.
No, but the fact is that our output is bad.
Yes, so we didn't even benefit from the increase in price. Because the price we are getting was what we bought in the future, in the past.
So that's one bad one. Gold is shining bright like a diamond and could hit $3,000. That's good news if we get a lot from it. But the galamsey, we have to deal with it. And then our oil. Oil dips as demand worries outweigh Middle East supply risk.
Speaking of Middle East, I just want to give you three quick stories on the situation of war. And if you go to the BBC, for example, you go to Reuters as well, you go to Bloomberg, there's a lot happening in relation to Israel. So, for example, we're told that Netanyahu is being advised by his allies not to sort of hit back at Iran. So, but Israel is divided about what to do next. Whether the Middle East plunges into wider chaos will be based on what Benjamin Netanyahu does. His allies are asking him to use the sanctions route, but I'm sure his war cabinet is telling him something else. Then if you go to the BBC, Ukraine warns of World War III ahead of long-stalled Congress aid vote. Ukraine's prime minister has told the BBC there will be a third world war if Ukraine loses its conflict with Russia, as he urges the US Congress to pass a long-stalled foreign aid bill. Basically, they want more money to continue fighting.
Can you imagine?
Then if you go to Al Jazeera, there's lots of stories. Hezbollah launches missiles and drones at northern Israel. Israel hits Rafah as UNRWA chief warns dehumanization is rampant in the Gaza war. So Al Jazeera is really on the war thing.
So these multilateral institutions that were built to deal with these things. Well,
you know, Biden is urging Congress to end impasse and send aid to Israel and Ukraine.
Wow, look.
You then let me give you a last.
You see
one.
Why I told you that? What do you call?
Let
it?
Me finish what I'm doing.
Donatus should have been there. For 4 years, we didn't have any of these problems.
Just take your time. Why?
You brought this man.
Human-induced climate change caused deadly Sahel heat wave. Estelle says
yeah.
The deadly heat wave that hit Africa's Sahel region in early April would not have occurred without human-induced climate change, according to a study by the World Weather Attribution Group. Published today, Thursday. So the heat you are feeling is not just nature, it's human beings.
Galamsey is part of it.
All that is. So let's stop the war.
Yes. Let's bring Donatus back. He will fix the problem.
Oh, look at you.
The City Breakfast Show. Rise above the noise.
Join the conversation on the City Breakfast Show on Facebook at facebook.com/city97.3, Twitter at twitter.com/city973, and Instagram at instagram.com/city973 with hashtag CityCBS.
This is the City Breakfast Show, the city's biggest conversation.
City Business News brought to you by Access Bank, Goyle and MTN. Ila Tilati has the details. Good morning.
Good morning, Bernard. Hello and welcome to the breakfast edition of City Business News, proudly brought to you by MTN, Goyle and Access Bank. Coming up this morning, government eyes addressing housing deficit in 10 years as it expects private partnership to drive down the cost of accommodation in the country. Plus, total value of trade between Ghana and the UK increases significantly by some 44.6%. We'll tell you why. We are grateful that you joined us this Thursday morning. My name is Nila Tilate. Details of our stories now. Government is aiming at addressing Ghana's housing deficit in 10 years as it explores private partnership in the construction of affordable housing projects. Ghana currently has a national housing deficit of 1.8 million units, while efforts such as the Saglemi housing project have largely stalled and are riddled with controversies. Speaking to Bernard Avle on City TV's current affairs program, the Point of View Minister for Works and Housing, Kuju Upon Nkrumah, indicated the government's effort to seek private partnerships to continue with the project to drive down the cost of housing.
The price point, I think, that has been evolved for the average family three-bedroom affordable housing, you're sitting somewhere around the $35,000 mark. The question is, can we do anything to bring it down to what some of our competitors are doing, about the $25,000 mark? That's number one. And even if it was, what percentage of our population can get a mortgage to purchase it? It brings two things that you have to do. On the supply side, you have to find a way to look for cheaper construction costs. Cost of materials are still very high. So how do you bring the cost of materials down? You've got to deal with that. You also have to deal with construction financing. And because if even a developer has to borrow at what, 25-30% just to finance already expensive materials to build, then by the time he's done, it's not affordable housing.
Kojo Opon Nkrumah as minister responsible for works and housing. Now, there has been a significant increase in trade between Ghana and the UK. The total value of trade in goods and exports between the two countries stood at £2.3 billion at the end of the third quarter of 2023, up from the £703 million, representing a substantial 44.6% increase from the previous year. This suggests growing economic ties for both economies. Here's more from the UK's Department for Business and Trade fact sheet.
Ghana has been ranked as the UK's 65th largest trading partner in the four quarters leading up to the end of the quarter three of 2023, accounting for 0.1% of the total UK trade. The report also notes that the total UK export to Ghana amounted to £1.0 billion in the four quarters to the end of the third quarter of 2023, an increase of 5.8% or £57 million in current prices. The top four products Ghana imported from the UK in 2023 included textile fibers, general industrial machinery, meat and meat preparations, and miscellaneous metal manufacturing products. Data from the Bank of Ghana, however, suggests that the difference between the country's exports and imports at the end of 2023 resulted in a positive trade balance of $2.6 billion. Meanwhile, the government continues to assure of making the economy export-driven to help reduce the seasonal pressure that amounts on the local currency.
That's a business desk report. Now, the government is expected to save approximately 4% of energy typically lost during the transmission of power from the coast to the middle and northern belts of the country. This is attributed to the establishment of a gas pipeline in the Ashanti region and the relocation of the Ameri Power Plant to the region. The Gensa pipeline network spans around 430 kilometers and includes 23 gas stations, providing natural gas to enhance the nation's power sector. During a commissioning ceremony for the pipeline in the Ashanti region, board chairman of Gensa Energy, Nana Osainyampon VI, stated that the facility would help the country save on energy costs.
Now, with the gas available in Kumasi, which is in the middle belt, and with power plants relocating to this enclave, the country is going to save that 4% and also increase generational capacity for the middle belt, the northern areas, and beyond. So this project is indeed going to be very beneficial to the country Ghana. Not quite. It is still natural gas, so it cannot be bottled for domestic use. It has to undergo further processing for that. But at this current state, it is mainly directed at energy production.
Nana Osainyampon VI is board chairman of Gensa Energy. The Chamber of Bulk Oil Distributors says the rate used by the NPA in the calculation of its new price floor mechanism will lead to significant losses being recorded by BDCs. The Chamber says the CD has been pegged much lower than expected, hence the need for revisions to protect players in the downstream petroleum sector. Dr. Patrick Ofori is the CEO of the Chamber of Bulk Oil Distributors.
If we really want to ensure sustainability and efficiency of the sector, and for businesses to thrive, they need to give something that is really close to the market. We're looking at a situation whereby even if they are not using the commercial rate we quote, the justification that different commercial banks quote different rates, we can use a rate that is somehow closer to all the commercial banks and benchmark it according to, like let's say using the Bloomberg rate, which is also internationally accepted, or the average between the commercial rate and the Bank of Ghana auction rate. These give a sense that the regulator wants to enforce.
Dr. Patrick Ofori is the CEO of the Chamber of Bulk Oil Distributors. Now, the Bank of Ghana says it remains within its end-year inflation target of 15 plus or minus 2% for 2024, despite the underlying pressures. This is also in alignment with the IMF projection for the same period. It comes at a time that the IMF and other rating agencies have predicted a single-digit inflation for Ghana in 2025. Dr. Ernest Addison is governor of the Bank of Ghana, and he's been providing the outlook for this year.
I mean, the inflation target is that we have not adjusted our end year 15 plus or minus 2. We still think that this is within reach. We had expected that, you know, would have had a continuous disinflation in terms of the path. But we saw what happened in March, which was consistent with the base effects from 2023. We think it's just a temporary development. The month-on-month increases in inflation are still on a downward trend. And we expect that in the second quarter of this year, we would resume the disinflation path. And therefore, we haven't found it necessary to revise the targets for inflation for 2024. So we are on course.
Dr. Ernest Addison is governor of the Bank of Ghana. Let me now take you to the Interbank Foreign Exchange Market. Let's check out the performance of the local currency. And the dollar is selling at 13 cedis and a peso. After gaining 1 peso, the British pound is selling at 16 cedis, 17 pesos. It recorded no price change. The euro is selling at 13 cedis, 84 pesos after gaining 3 pesos. However, if you visit any of the forex bureaus in the capital near you, the dollar could be sold to you at 13 cedis, 40 pesos, the British pound at 16 cedis, 60 pesos, that of the euro going for 14 cedis, 30 pesos. And that's it for the breakfast edition of City Business News, proudly brought to you by MTN Goil and Access Bank. My name is Neil Atilati. Do you have a good business day?
This is the City Breakfast Show, the city's biggest conversation.
So the City Business News was brought to us by Goil. Look out for the auto gas service station in your area. We've opened ultra-modern LPG auto gas service stations. So whether you are in Cape Coast or Takrady or Kumasi or Accra, Goil is delivering the safest and affordable gas at your convenience. Goil, good energy. Access Bank is also proud to be associated with City Business News. You can send money to pay for goods and services, make business transactions, and cover school fees across Africa without worrying about foreign exchange losses or delays. It's straightforward, secure, and keeps your mind at ease. When you send money in cedis, it will be received in any other currency by the recipient. Go to ghana.accessbankplc.com or call our toll-free number 0800-004400. Access Bank, more than banking. And MTN is also proud to be associated with the Business News. You can go SIMless with MTN's eSIM and enjoy the convenience of connecting multiple phone numbers to one single phone or device. Simply download my MTN app today to request your MTN eSIM and enjoy the sweet SIMless life everywhere you go. Welcoming on board to the kickoff platform, Zonda. Zonda. Do you know Shantui? You don't know Shantui. You don't know. Do you know TX? You don't know what I'm talking about. In a world where dreams are the driving force, one company stands out as the hope of transformation. Zonda Ghana Limited, your one-stop shop for quality trucks like Shantui bulldozers, excavators, graders, payloaders, rollers, power pickups, TX trucks, and oil tanks, all made and assembled right here in Ghana. At Zonda Ghana Limited, we do not only create opportunities and empower people, we provide top-notch after-sales service for all your heavy and light-duty trucks and machinery needs. Visit us today off the Tema Plow Road. Call 0501-773333 or 0501-772222. Zonda, built in Ghana,
building Ghana. Kickoff also brought to you by Lesheho. With our fixed deposit solution, you're not just investing, you're making your money work harder for you so you can watch your wealth grow. The Lesheho fixed deposit solution is your best option to power up your finances and unlock your path to prosperity. Call 027-004-0733. Don't settle for average returns. Join the investment revolution with our fixed deposit solution from Lesheho. Let's improve life. And Shell fuels with Dynaflex Tech, our most advanced to prevent deposit buildup, keep your engine clean and protected. Also designed to help save fuel and get extra kilometers from each tank fill so you can do more in your day. Drive into a Shell station today, fuel your car with Shell fuels designed for energy efficiency. Go well.
Antonio Rudiger, who has been a rock, he's kept out Haaland again over two immense battles with the great striker. And now he's got his eyes on the prize. Rudiger to send Real Madrid through to the semis. He's done it! Real Madrid have shown their mettle once more.
Bernard Abeku.
My boss.
Charlie, this is your Bernard. The way you are going, me, my name, I have to change it too.
Brother, I beg you.
What's your name?
Bernard Abeku.
Your name is what?
Bernard Abeku.
So, how do you spell it?
B-E-N-N-A-R-D.
So, the Nard, no. You have to, you are adding more Nard.
Absolutely.
So, the Bernard.
Just placing a bit of emphasis.
Bernard?
Yeah,
Bernard. What a game. What a game yesterday.
What a game yesterday. Oh, what a game. Goodness.
Oh my goodness.
I mean, for Real Madrid, I think at the point they were a bit scared. They sat.
They were playing the rope a dope. Give me all you can. You still cannot score.
I mean, and Manchester City, these guys are brilliant.
Yeah.
And how Pep does it is strange. He picks ordinary players and transforms them into professionals.
They say class is permanent, form is temporary.
Yes, at the end of the day, he showed
class. Man City have money and form. What else do you have for us this morning?
Well, there's a lot. We hear from Accra Hato folks, big man, of course, a board member, and know that Real Madrid exerting revenge on Manchester City to reach the Champions League semi-finals 4-3 on penalties at the Etihad last night. And of course, we'll review the two blockbuster games in the UEFA Champions League, where Arsenal also got knocked out by Bayern Munich in the other quarterfinal matchup. I am Bernard Abeku-Ochre, and many thanks for joining me for all the updates right here on Kickoff. Kickoff is proudly brought to you by Shell, Lesheho, and Zonda. We start off from last night's drama in the UEFA Champions League at Etihad. Manchester City's hold on the Champions League was wrestled away by Real Madrid as they were beaten on penalties in a dramatic quarterfinal clash. It's ended City's bid for another treble of the Champions League, Premier League and FA Cup. Here's Madrid's Jude Bellingham.
Yeah, I think it's relief. It's definitely because you put so much into the game and, you know, I've played against City before when you've been close and you feel like you're going to get something out of it and then all of a sudden they kind of snatch it away from you. So you have to work really hard to beat them and, you know, I was pretty much dead on my feet at the end and to win the game is a massive reward.
There were big moments, especially in the second half, where they had the pressure on you so much. How difficult were those moments to make sure you defended resolutely and you kept the focus?
It's so difficult because, you know, they're continuously probing with the ball. They move you around and, you know, they take you into positions that sometimes you don't want to go, you know, but you have to follow man for man, otherwise they can punish you, and they did for the goal. And to be fair, I think most teams at that point would fall apart when City kind of get on top here, the crowd gets going. But we stood up really well, and for another half an hour, 40 minutes, we worked hard.
Let's also hear from Manchester City's Ruben Dias, who is disappointed to see his side exit the competition.
Well, I don't even really know what to say. It's just frustrating. We dominated the game, the whole game. In the end, you go until the penalties. The effort was there. We had our chances, but it's obviously a difficult one to take.
Is that probably the most frustrating part for you guys, that as you say, after they scored their goal, you dominated the rest of the match? So to go out on penalties just feels like a horrible way to lose the game.
Yeah, of course, you always end up, especially the way we're controlling the game, you always end up doing everything to try and avoid going to penalties, because in a way that's what they wanted. But yeah, it's difficult to take it, but yeah, there's only one way, and the way is forward.
Or elsewhere at the Allianz Arena, a bullet header from Joshua Kimmich saw Bayern Munich win 1-0 in claiming a 3-2 aggregate victory and knock Arsenal out of the competition. Bayern will now face Real Madrid in a semi-final, so with the first leg tie set to take place on April 30 or May 1 and May 7 or May 8. Bayern Munich's Harry Kane had this to say after the win against the Gunners.
Harry, just how big of a win was that tonight? Your smile says it all.
Yeah, unbelievable win. You know, it's been a tough season for us. We've had to fight and really grind at times, and today was that. You know, we knew it was going to be a tough game. We knew at home we could make the difference with our fans there, and it was what we expected. A tough game, a tight game. Great goal from Josh to make the difference for us, and then it was about defending and keeping that clean sheet. So, to reach the semi-final is a great achievement for us, and we can enjoy this one.
Let's hear from Arsenal's Jorginho after the loss to the Bavarians.
Yeah, definitely a tough one. But in this competition, when you switch off just a little bit, you pay the price. And unfortunately, we didn't go through. We need to put our heads up because we have still a lot to play. And of course, to swallow it, it will take a few days, but we need to go again. That's how it is, and we move forward.
Well, in the Europa League tonight, it's AS Roma versus AC Milan. Atalanta take on Liverpool. Marseille up against Benfica. West Ham United will combine Leverkusen to the London Stadium at 7 p.m. Now to this. Juventus have been ordered to pay Cristiano Ronaldo £8.3 million in old wages by an Italian court. Ronaldo agreed to defer wages when football in Italy was halted by the COVID pandemic in the 2020-2021 season. The Portuguese had claimed he was owed more than £17 million by his former club. The Court of Arbitration said the club should pay what the player would have received after tax and other deductions. Here in Ghana, Accra Hearts of Oak board member Vincent Odoto Isoa says the club's result thus far in the ongoing season have been disappointing compared to the level of investment made by the club. He said this in an exclusive interview on Football Made in Ghana in the wake of Accra Hearts of Oak's 3-1 win over Karela United. Prior to the win, Hearts endured a 3-game losing run.
We are disappointed. When you look at Hearts of Oak as an organization, Hearts of Oak as a unit, we have everything in place to be the most successful club in the country. We have everything in place. We have infrastructure. I believe everybody agrees that we had a very good preseason. We recruited almost everybody that everyone thought was the best in the country. But then, so our on-field results is disappointing compared to the investment that we've made.
I see.
So honestly, we are not happy where we are. But well, the league table doesn't lie. So that's where we are.
Well, Vincent Odoto Isoa also believes supporters of Accra Hearts of Oak and Kumasi Asante Kotoko must catch up to the modern responsibilities of supporting a football club.
If you are a Hearts supporter and you are listening to me, I believe Hearts and Kotoko, there's one common denominator. Our supporters must begin to catch up with the modern responsibilities of supporters.
Okay.
The supporters, management, board, we all have boundaries. And we must respect the boundaries and allow everybody to have their space and take decisions.
Okay.
Football has moved on, completely moved on. The kind of systems that were in place 30, 20 years ago, you can be very, very nostalgic, but that will not survive in this 21st century.
Okay.
I believe that we've been victims of our own internal issues. Mm. That hasn't allowed... that has conveyed a sort of chaos to our stakeholders.
Okay.
And our stakeholders have taken advantage of it and have more or less brought the Hearts of Oak and Kotoko on their knees.
Wow.
That is the problem.
Vincent Odoto Isoa is a board member of Accra Heart of Oak. We finished off with some tennis, and tennis star Emma Raducanu continued her stunning form on clay as she sealed an emphatic win against Angelique Kerber at the Porsche Tennis Grand Prix in Stuttgart. The 21-year-old dismantled home favourite Angelique Kerber 6-2, 6-1. Elsewhere in Barcelona, Rafael Nadal's comeback came to a disappointing end as he was beaten 7-5, 6-1 by Alex de Minaur. Nadal was playing his second match after picking up an injury in January, but struggled to keep up with his opponent.
And I think I was able to show myself, most important, and the rest of the world, to show myself that when I was really trying at a high percentage of intensity, my level was there to compete. No, so and I didn't practice a lot, so that's encouraged me to keep going. It says me that if I'm able to spend days on the tour and keep practicing with the players on this surface, I really hope and really believe that I can keep being competitive. My body allow me to push the way that I need.
That's your sports on Kickoff. Kickoff is proudly brought to you by Shell, Leshejo, and Zonda. Join us later at 5 p.m. for the very latest on Sports Flash. I am Bernard Abeku-Ortiz. Sports is life. Get involved.
This is the City Breakfast Show. The city's biggest conversation. The City Breakfast Show. Rise above the noise.
It's under one entertainment. Yeah, tell them about Jay, the new sex song. Telling you for relax, let me spit on. Tell them about the shorty I'm moving on. The clothes on the body and the heels she's on. You bang chick a valley with Vuitton. Don't you hang a bell, may I could go on. We used to make love to the Houston song. I go play horse and Lucha sit on. We all know Bobby let Houston on. But don't ask for me, then my fate, I just gone. It's my game, drink quite all night long. I'm a diamond, I'm a Tiasaku, I'm a bone, yeah, man. Just on and yano, it is what it is. Yes. I think crossed all up one on your man. Let's go.
My baby, oh don't you worry, be alright, baby, right, baby. And I go never make you cry, baby. They can deny the way we ride, baby, yeah, eh. Weather and the sunshine, come give me your love. And as the rain falls, come give me your hand. Before I be one time, come give me your love. Always me and you for be one mind. Come give me your hand. Science, you pull that ball.
Seven 36 City Breakfast Show, 18th April 2024. Happens to be the birthday of a number of people.
Girl, I must confess, who they hear me though, hey.
And let me start with a good friend of mine. Happy birthday to our inspirational leader, Selassie Wanya, MD, CEO at DCI.
So even if you far away,
a proper or that dear man. Selassie Wanya, happy birthday to you, bro. Enjoy the best of the day. Coming in from your diamonds at DCI.
Bernard, happy 13th birthday to our lovely son, Kwejo of Owusu Frimpong of East Airport International School. He has 7 from your parents, Mr. and Mrs. Owusu Frimpong, your sister, Mami Sewa, and all your uncles and aunties. Also wishing you all the best in life. And happy 50th birthday to Odisha Gifty and Ma Owusu Subuache, Senior Revenue Officer, GRA, Koforidua TSC. Odisha Gifty and Ma Owu, Senior Revenue Officer, GRA, Koforidua TSC.
Okay.
Happy birthday to you. And yesterday was your birthday, Ambassador Dr. Emmanuel Enos, Director of State Protocol. Happy birthday to you, belated. And please wish Odadia Michael Dakun a happy birthday filled with great blessings,
Michael
peace.
Dakun.
Michael Dakun, thank you. Blessings, peace, and success, and a wonderful new year from Brother Fred Dakun, Dakun, and all Odadia 90s. 1973. Mm-hmm. The Adoboy family wishes Francis Ferdinand Adoboy the best of lives, fulfilling expectations with good health, happiness, and wellness. This is from Frank and Mercy Adoboy in OEB. Happy birthday to Dorcas Nyameche Kofi, musically known as Pinky Pex, an emerging Ghanaian Afrobeat and dancehall artist. Okay. May you find... Oh, I thought the rest of the message would be in dancehall language, but it goes on in English. It says, may you find favor before men and continue to stay humble, even in greatness. Happy birthday from Panda Entertainment GA team and CEO Bobby J. We love you and stay blessed. Now for your mind.
All right, a few more coming in. This one says, happy birthday to Joanna Caesar of Friendly Mall from CEO of CBG, Mr. Daniel Addo, and the entire staff at the bank.
Okay, so let me do this one. Coming in from all of us here at 97.3 City FM and City Television. And it's going out to our beautiful era of Roman Levy.
Mm-hmm.
Roman Levy and Associate.
Mm-hmm. Roman. Is it Roman Levy?
No, it's Roman Levy and
Roman
Associate.
Roman Levy and Associate, okay.
And basically, it's to celebrate her birthday today.
Mm-hmm.
You will do wonderful things and continue to rise in life. Mm-hmm. May positive things happen to you. And we do know that you have a full, full life ahead of you. So keep rising.
Got a feel, girl, my heart done before you, my love not real. I promise on my honor today by your side.
You know, there's two things we read today that we didn't discuss, but I think we need to go back to. Duncan Amor is predicting fuel prices will reach 17 cedis per liter. It's not something we should be joking with. It's too serious. My fuel I bought on Monday, by this morning, I had to top up.
Mm-hmm.
I had to top up. And it's costing me more and more to just fill my tank.
Mm.
So this is, I'm planning my routes well. But the issue with the fuel is, it's not even the only thing that's gone up. There's a new report that has been released. It was released just this week, early April. And it's titled, Navigating Inflation, Impacts of Cost of Living Crisis on Workers in Informal Employment in Accra. If you permit me to read like 3 or 4 paragraphs of this, then I ask you how you are relating, how you relate to this. So it says, Ghana is facing a cost of living crisis marked by a rapid escalation in the price of goods and services. Inflation reached a 22-year record of 54% in December 2022. While the economy has slightly recovered from the pandemic in 2021, high levels of government debt, the closure of international markets to Ghana, and global disruptions to the supply chain as a consequence of the war in Ukraine all led to steep depreciation of the cedi. Considering the country relies heavily on imports, the situation resulted in high inflationary pressure. In 2022, nearly 850,000 Ghanaians were pushed into poverty due to rising prices. This is Kwachi and Co. 2023.
Mm.
By the time this research was conducted, October 2023, which is last year, so third quarter or fourth quarter last year, the inflation rate had reached 35%. It's now 25%. It was particularly high for food and non-alcoholic beverages, which is more than 45%, and other basic necessities like health services, 28%, housing, water, and electricity, more than 25%, transport, 25%, and education, 13%. Ghana's cost of living crisis disproportionately affects workers in informal employment, who make up 89% of the employed population. That's 90%, gentlemen, of the employed. So 9 out of 10 Ghanaians are informal sector workers.
That's serious,
right?
Nine out of ten.
Yes, because 89%, 9 out of 10, right? Who make up? Now, this is by 83% in Accra.
Meanwhile, government is the single biggest employer.
Yeah, so in Accra. No, government is the single biggest formal employer.
Formal employer.
Yes.
Okay.
83% informal in Accra. This is from Babwating and Vanek. Most workers in informal employment lack access to critical safety nets, pension, and poverty relief programs, cash transfers, and microfinance schemes, which leave them particularly vulnerable to economic shocks. The pandemic has already resulted in significant levels of debt and asset losses among the population. The current inflation shock increases the likelihood that temporary declines in earnings become entrenched. This booklet shows how the cost of living crisis is affecting workers in informal employment in Accra. It draws on exploratory research conducted with Kaya Ye, market traders, street vendors, and waste pickers. Data was collected, they give all those details, 6 focus groups, 31 workers, 10 street vendors, 10 waste pickers, 5 market traders, 6 IE. In addition, workers filled out a short questionnaire, I don't think that. Now, how is cost of living crisis impacting workers in informal employment? This is where I want to go. Inflation in the country translates into decreased purchasing power and lower demand for products and services of workers in informal employment. Further, across all occupations, workers reported increased competition, lower bargaining power, and limited options to adapt their livelihoods. Not surprisingly, in October 2023, 9 in 10 of the interviewed workers said they were earning less compared to the beginning of the year. 9 in 10 of the interviewed workers said they were earning less compared to the beginning of the year. Now, listen to this one. A monthly living wage in Ghana averaged 2,922 cedis in 2023. This is from the Global Living Wage Coalition.
2,922
cedis. So the monthly living wage.
Monthly living wage. Okay.
This is the living wage required by workers in peri-urban areas to be able to afford a basic but decent living standard. So this living wage is not what people are earning. This is what people are supposed to earn. So they are saying that if you want, so you live in Kasua, Tema, Adenta, Ashaiman, peri-urban Accra, if you want something that basic. Can let you survive, you need at least 2,922 cedis. So this is the living wage required by workers in peri-urban areas to be able to afford a basic but decent living standard. A typical worker in the focus group was working 6 days per week and earning 1,500 a month. Kayayi were the lowest earning group. A typical worker earns 500 a month, followed by street vendors, 1,250, waste pickers, 1,300, and market traders, 2,200. The great majority of interviewed workers were also the primary earners in their households. While the Ghanaian government implemented policies to mitigate cost of living pressures, these interventions were ineffective in reaching and supporting the informal workforce. In mid-2022, when inflation hit a two-decade high, the government approved a 15% cost of living allowance, COLA. The measure, which expired in December of the same year, was limited to public sector workers. The 10% increase to the minimum wage in January 2023 also proved insufficient to counter the rapid inflation and failed to provide any relief to workers in informal employment who remain outside its scope. This is World Bank 2023. Let me read something. We informal sector workers do not get any system support.
You are quoting now.
Yes. The salaries of formal workers can be increased, but if informal workers decide to increase the price of goods, the customers may decide to buy from you or not. So it can make work hard for you. This is a Mill Street vendor. Another person. Before you get satisfactory food for 2 cedis.
But let me take
four.
That. One. Before, you could get satisfactory food for 2 Ghana cedis. But now, 10 Ghana cedis can get you satisfied. These days, when I go and buy food and they ask me how much meat I will buy, I get surprised because protein is not my problem. I want to be satisfied. So I don't think about meat because I cannot afford it. Today, I only have 15 Ghana cedis to spend. And this morning, I've already spent 5 cedis on porridge. This is a female street Kayayo.
Don't forget, HIV among street vendors is also high. A woman with no money, vulnerable to sexual exploitation. We haven't even gone there. Let me continue. Food was the most important expense in workers' households. A typical worker in the focus group was spending over half of the household earnings on food. Half.
Yeah.
Consistent with the behavior of the lowest quintile in Ghana. Even when making cuts to other non-essential items, workers from all sectors reported reduced food consumption to cope with rising costs. In turn, this can lead to short and long-term impacts on food security and nutritional diversity. Read the next quote for me.
Yes. This one says, the biggest challenge is education, because I know I am not educated and have sworn to make sure my children are educated, because I wouldn't want my children to become waste pickers like myself. So when I am working hard and I get tired, it's my children's education that pushes me to work harder. This is a male waste picker.
Education was the most important cost for workers after food. Within the focus groups, a typical worker with children spent almost a third of their household earnings on education. Common coping mechanisms to face rising school fees were incurring debt, using business capital or reducing food consumption, opting for public education or schools with daily fees, and renting textbooks.
Renting textbooks.
Especially among waste pickers, one of the lowest earning sectors.
Workers said education was the most challenging cost element, but one that they could not forego, given the implications for their children's well-being and the possibility of breaking the intergenerational cycle of poverty. Transportation was also a source of concern for workers, and cuts to this expenditure have significantly eroded their living standards. To avoid transportation costs, for example, most waste pickers have opted to sleep close to their place of work. Others are walking to their workplace to reduce transportation costs, increasing their working hours. Similarly, workers reported steep increases in the cost of rent and utilities such as electricity, tariffs, and water. To cope with the former, workers mentioned delaying payment and moving back to their hometowns or moving in with other family members, whereas cuts to expenditure were the main mechanism to afford rising utilities. Read those quotes for me.
Most of us have children back home dependent on us. Sometimes we send a little we earn here for them to buy books for our children and sleep on empty stomach. This is a female Kayayo. School children now trek to school at dawn because we can't afford transportation. It is a pity sight to behold when you see these kids at dawn walk long distances just to be educated. This is another female street this is a vendor.
So what has exacerbated the crisis for workers in informal employment? Historically, street vendors and market traders face high levels of economic and financial risk, job insecurity, harassment by local authorities, lack of access to credit, and lack of involvement in national and policy-making process. In addition, the current cost of living crisis impacts both their households and their businesses through a number of things: price volatility, lower demand for products and services, increased competition. Read the two quotes before I go there.
You could have bought something for 80 Ghana cedis yesterday, but for 100 Ghana cedis today. There is no prompt given when the prices are increased. When you hear prices have been increased, you have to increase the prices of the items you are selling in order to make enough money to purchase new goods. However, this does not happen and we run at a loss. This is a male market trader. And then there is a female street vendor who says, initially, prices on imported goods were low, so we could buy, sell and get some profit. But now taxes have made them higher. Buying from Togo to come sell has become expensive as compared to previous years. So when doing business, you can be selling a consignment for a long time before it finishes, making us spend all the capital before the goods are out of stock.
Now, the cost of living crisis has been made worse by six factors. The first one is price volatility. Inflation raises the cost of traders and vendors' inventory and limits their capacity to restock their capital. The rapid depreciation of the cedi also results in high fluctuations and affects traders' ability to plan and adjust their prices accordingly, especially for imported items. Two, lower demand for products and services. Most traders and street vendors describe lower purchasing power among their customers amid rising inflation. Because most rely on daily earnings to restock their capital, lower sales directly affect the sustainability of their livelihoods. Number three, increased competition. Sharp economic downturns associated with a rise in informal employment. Both market traders and street vendors report increased competition that dates back to the pandemic, including the presence of whole traders that now sell retail and can afford to sell at lower prices. The selling of expired goods, which lowers prices even further, and the installation of outdoor markets, coupled with lower demand for their products. Competition limits traders and vendors' ability to raise prices in line with inflation.
Even with the profit you will get, you can have no sales from morning, and the 10 Ghana cedis you will get, the buyer will bargain to reduce it by 2 Ghana cedi or 3 Ghana cedi. Since you have not made any sales, you would need at least your transport fare to get home, so you will have to sell it for 7 Ghana cedis.
The fourth factor is rising taxes and tolls and operational fees. Despite both popular and policy narratives that workers in informal employment do not pay tax. Listen to this carefully. Overall tax payment in the informal sector in Accra is prevalent. This is Anyidoho et al. 2022. In the focus groups, both market traders and street vendors use taxes, quote unquote, as a broad term for a variety of fees, levies, and taxes collected by municipal and central governments, including license for stores, daily tolls for the use of space, and income taxes. Vendors and traders complained that these various taxes were high, had increased, and were set without consultation. Immediately preceding this pandemic, most market traders and street vendors saw an increase in the daily toll from one cedi to two cedi. The increase was marked as a tax for sanitation. Beginning in 2023, Operating permits or licenses were also increased, depending on the face value assessment made by the tax official responsible for the collection. These increases have not been matched with improvement in market infrastructure as perceived by workers.
If you go for goods and sell it for 15 Ghana cedis, and someone else goes for expired goods with reduced prices and he or she sells it for 10 Ghana cedis, your goods might take time to finish as people will not buy.
This is a female market vendor. Now, yeah. The fifth point, exposure to weather impacts. Compounding the challenge associated with rising inflation, market traders and street vendors reported that poor market infrastructure increases their exposure to weather events such as rain and heat, causing damage to their merchandise and stores and impacting sales and earnings.
Another challenge we have in the market is the gutters. All the gutters are choked, so when it rains, it floods the entire market. We have problems with our lights. My challenge at where I sell is that when it rains, we don't have a shed to cover our goods. So when it rains and you are not around, your goods will be destroyed. At the same time, the place we keep the goods when we close is also a problem, because different people bring different goods, and if the goods are mixed with others that are liquid or perishable, it can damage your goods.
Don't forget, the majority or 66% of self-employed informal sector operators in Accra surveyed in their 2022 report said they paid at least one type of tax fee or payment, excluding access to basic services while at work, related to their income generating activity. In the focus groups, market traders reported paying daily tolls, annual licenses, AMA shop levies, and income tax. Street vendors also reported paying daily tolls, annual licenses, monthly GRA tax, and additional levies and fees. Now, the sixth point is harassment.
Mm-hmm.
Street vendors in particular mentioned the lack of vending spaces as a significant obstacle to their livelihoods. Not only did their ability to sell depend on the weather, they also reported constant harassment, including confiscation and extortion from authorities. Then they dealt with waste pickers. I'm just going through all of this to get you to see the levels of poverty people are facing. Now, waste pickers in Kpon landfill play a critical role in the collection of recycled material. It gives some background to this. Yeah. Now, they are facing lower stock of recyclables caused by increased competition and fewer trucks coming into the landfill site. There's poor infrastructure, lower selling prices, and dump site closures. Now, Kayaye, they face lower demand for their service, stigma and discrimination, occupational health risks, high accommodation costs, and all kinds of things. Now, let's come to how workers are coping. To face the rising cost of living, workers have limited livelihood adaptation and coping mechanism. Close to half of the workers interviewed had borrowed money, but only three had a formal loan, ranging from 500 cedis to 5,000. Traders mentioned the lack of collateral as the main obstacle in accessing bank loans, especially if requesting higher amounts. Among workers who borrowed from an informal source, debts ranged from 140 cedis to 7,000 cedis, with interest rates as high as 36%. The main reason for borrowing included covering education, health cost, and business expense. Among the limited livelihood adaptations that workers mentioned were working longer hours. This is mostly market traders, street vendors, waste pickers, and kayaye. Alternating working hours, switching selling items from non-food to food, lowering selling prices, walking to or sleeping near the place of work, establishing a personal relationship with clients to facilitate sales. This is street vendors. Changing the place of work, engaging in menial jobs. Workers, member-based organizations played a crucial role during the pandemic to provide support where the market or state had failed. Alarmingly, in the current context, all sectors describe a weakening of their organizational capacity directly related to members' inability to pay the association fees, to attend meetings, giving longer working hours, or transportation costs, and the lack of resources to participate in collective coping strategies.
There are some quotes here, Bernard. We used to meet, but these days we are unable to because people cannot afford transportation. Some may not have eaten, so it makes calling for a meeting difficult. It has made our organization very difficult. Female street vendor leader. Now, at first, we used to do group contributions to buy food items to cook a group meal, but now food items are expensive. So when we do that, the food won't be enough to satisfy us. This is a female kind.
Let me end with concerns about physical and mental health. A main coping strategy across sectors was cutting food consumption and reducing food quality. Combined with longer working hours, workers indirectly and indirectly describe negative longer-term effects on their health due to this situation. Waste pickers and Kaya, for instance, describe dire and exhausting working conditions and physical workload that required heavy meals. In the current context, however, they also describe a preference for satisfying rather than nutrition. foods. Mm. Both sectors describe as symptoms of poor nutrition, such as dizziness, fainting, and lack of strength. Oh, street vendors and market traders spoke about reducing food diversity and opting for lower quality staples to cope with rising prices, while simultaneously walking to their place of work to save on transportation costs.
Bernard, it would have been a good thing if there was a plan for us traders so we can at least be checked, like healthcare. Accessing healthcare is really expensive, so we do not go to the hospital with our NHIS card. The only drug you are assured of is paracetamol.
Workers are experiencing strains on their mental health as well and well-being because of the economic struggles. Street vendors and market traders in particular describe symptoms of insomnia and anxiety when coping with rising cost of living.
We come to work very early at dawn and close really late at night. Even if we go home, we are unable to sleep because we tend to be thinking rather than sleeping. Money for our children's fees and other things keep us awake at night.
In addition, workers described challenges in accessing the healthcare system, noting that the NHIS card only provides minimum coverage and treatment. Previous research has shown that high premium costs, complicated administration, lengthy registration procedures, as well as long waiting periods in health facilities, restricted the access of workers in informal employment to good quality health care. With the cost of living crisis, Kaiyo, for example, are opting for self-medication to treat work-related injuries and pains.
After a long walk under the sun with a heavy load, sometimes we feel body pains. And since the income we earn is not enough for the hospital, we would have to do self-medication and buy some painkillers on the roadside.
While the government has urged workers in the informal economy to join the three-tier pension scheme, only one worker in the focus group joined the scheme since the pandemic. The main reason for not enrolling was lack of information, limited awareness, and lack of trust. This is consistent with previous research, which shows that a minority, 3% of workers in informal sector employment are members of the three-tier pension scheme. Such low coverage has been in part explained by low earnings of workers in informal employment, wrong understanding of pension, which influences their ability to contribute towards their entitlement, and low awareness. Now, let's conclude. What are workers demanding? As workers in informal employment navigate the cost of living crisis in Ghana, it's fundamental to invest in policies to support their livelihoods. This section reflects worker priority demands and policy recommendations. They want immediate support to help workers in informal employment to recover economically. Mm. Workers in informal employment need cash grants and soft loans. Mm-hmm. The central government should expand existing loan programs to include soft loans with low or no interest and establish an application process that is simple, accessible, transparent, and open to all. Number two, they want to guarantee that supportive economic policies are inclusive of workers in informal employment. Workers demand government intervention to control inflation and essential items, utility bills, essential food items, and transport. Three, of all sectors covered in this study, Kaiyo were the most vulnerable, and many were struggling to cover basic needs. The government should provide livelihood support, including food aid, access to secure housing close to places of work, and educational support through scholarships and support in childcare enrollment. Kaiyo also called for the Ministry of Gender and Social Protection to support income-generating and livelihood adaptation activities. They also want recognition that they want the government to recognize the workplace of workers in informal employment, including the public space and landfills, as legitimate sites of work.
Okay.
So they want, for example, the government to ensure access to public space. Mm-hmm. Street vendors demand a simplified and clear regulatory framework that would support rather than penalize work in public spaces. Mm-hmm. The municipal and metropolitan assemblies within the Greater Accra should end all forms of harassment and expand markets to create space for vendors, guaranteeing benefits for vendors and pedestrians alike. Mm. And then finally, they should invest in occupational health and safety of workers in informal employment. Mm. Why am I reading this report? Take the newspapers today. Minister of Finance says inflation is coming down. Ministry of where somebody will not neglect Zaglemi. We give big, big, big headlines to cover things that we think are interesting.
Yeah.
This research. Had it not been published on CT, wouldn't have even seen it. All right? We always have to go back to the reality of the situation. 89% of Ghanaians are in the informal sector, and this applies to them. So when we are writing stories and we are discussing at the high level, talking about all these controversies in our politics, these are the real problems people are facing. They don't have enough food to eat.
Mm-hmm.
They walk to work. They can't pay their children's school fees. And they don't have access to health care. And they are harassed daily.
Yeah.
At the place of work. This is the reality of most people. And one of the things we need to do is to keep reminding our leaders and ourselves that these are the issues.
Right? So that's why I read this report.
Mm.
Who the cup fits, let them wear it. Tech and social media trends brought to you by
FB and Bang. What if I told you that first things first? What if I told you that things are etched? Some things are etched in stone. What if I told you that the number one always comes before the number two and the letter A before B, and B always comes way before the letter N? What if I told you that at FB and Bank, our goal is to put you, our cherished customer, first, that you deserve financial services that we offer, which is the gold standard of value and excellence. Wouldn't this interest you enough to bank with us? When you think of a bank that cares and puts its customers first, put the B before the N, think FB and Bank. FB and Bank, you first.
So let's get straight into the segment. Nathan will give us the highlight.
Well, you can imagine what is trending after last night's UEFA Champions League episode. So hashtag Champions League, Bernardo, Rudiger, Real Madrid, Man City, all of that trending. Was a very interesting episode last night in the UEFA Champions League. Several fans are talking about the football. So the football is really, really, really dominating a lot of the conversations there as well. I mean, the other day I was talking about Tech Junction. It's still in the trends. Partey is still trending. Arsenal got KO'd out of the Champions League last night. He didn't play a single second. But, you know, his name is in the trends as well. On the music side of things, Stoneboy is trending. He and Davido performed in New York. They have a song together, Activate. So people are talking about that. If you go to the tech world, there's a very interesting feature on the BBC. Cara Maradin, she runs a wine farm, or it's called Foley Family Farms. Now, she's responsible for taking care of about 5,200 acres. That's a lot for one person to take care of. But she says she uses AI to monitor, you know, the farm wherever she is, and it can help create or, you know, keep the farm going. And they generate a lot and lots and lots of wine. So the feature essentially looks at an example of AI being used in the, you know, in agriculture or in a larger business sense. And several academics are also talking about AI and what it can do. Of course, they admit that some of the things are not fully understood by AI, but as we go along and as we work the system, AI will step in and do a lot of things. Now, I'm tying it to the story. I think during the newspaper review, we read a story that says over 40% of jobs are likely to be affected by AI in the future, or at present, or in the time to come. So that is the segment, Tech and Social Media Trends for the morning.
This is the City Breakfast Show, the city's biggest conversation.
So it's 10 minutes past 8, and if you wonder what I was reading, this is a report put together by WIEGO, Women in Informal Employment, Globalizing and Organizing. WIEGO. It's titled Navigating Inflation, Impacts of the Cost of Living Crisis on Workers in Informal Employment in Accra. You know, Sky, you can't solve a problem you don't acknowledge. And I think the government, the media, we haven't said it often enough that we are going through a cost of living crisis. And if you look at the areas mentioned, food,
health,
utilities, transportation,
education,
rent,
yeah,
education,
health.
There's a cost of living crisis.
Health.
Mm-hmm.
Health.
Now, they're saying that the a living wage is 2,900 cedis. Yeah. Based on the calculation, if you live out in the peri-urban Accra,
yeah,
you need at least 2,900 cedis a month.
That, is that the average?
No, this is not what people earn.
Okay.
This is what people need
what
to
you
earn.
Need.
Okay, ideally, okay.
If they will survive.
In the peri-urban area.
And there were so many people who...
And this was for 2023.
Yes, so they're saying that if you live in a peri-urban area, so let's say Amasaman,
Kasua,
or even in Kumasi, then in the outskirts, you need at least 3,000 CDs a month
to manage yourself
to survive. And they interviewed Kayaye, street vendors,
waste pickers,
street hawkers, sellers. Sky, it's a terrible situation. Yep. The other challenge is you have 89% of Ghanaians in informal employment. Mm-hmm. Almost every major announcement is thinking formal. For example, cola. TUC, hey, we want cola. Think about it. 89% of people who work are informal. Then the 11% of us are formal. Maybe about 30% of us are government workers. So if you put that together, that's probably 6% of the population, of the worker population, shouting about cola. And we give it all the airtime it requires. The 89%, who speaks for them? Do you get the point? So it's a big challenge. There's a gap between even our discourse. Like, there are spring meetings. Minister of Finance and IMF, they met at a high level, said a lot of things. They will talk about, what do you call it?
Rigidity and...
No, then they will say, well, we are doing poverty. They will use some word. They will say, oh, we are also thinking of the vulnerable. So we'll do LEAP. But the people are saying, they don't even understand how these things are done in terms of who benefits. Look at the basics they are asking for. Let me conclude the basics they are asking for again. All right. They are saying
they want
the central government to expand existing loan programs to include soft loans with low or no interest. Establish an application process that is simple, accessible, transparent, and open to all. Do you even know how to apply for LEAP?
No.
They also want inclusive economic policies for workers in informal employment. Workers want government intervention to cover inflation and essential items like utility bills, essential food items, and transport. People are walking to work, eating KK without fish. They are eating gari. So they basically want satisfaction, not nutrition. So he's not asking, he's buying rice and get a stew. No chicken, no meat, no egg.
Sakura.
The government should provide livelihood support, including food aid. Access to, for example, Kayaye. Is there a service for them and their children in terms of a school close to the market, which has subsidies? A place they can go and get food to eat at a subsidized price as Kayaye. You get the point? These are the things we think about. We make big announcements, so Sky. They're talking about access to housing close to work. Imagine Kayaye sleeping in front of shops. Sexual exploitation. All kinds of crazy things. And we miss out because we focus on, oh, we want to show how much economists we know. So we're going to ask some esoteric question about some funny numbers. There you have it. I don't think we've adjusted our economic policies to face the economic realities of informality. I don't think we've done that. They are talking about scholarships and support in childcare enrollment. Ministry of Gender should support income generating and livelihood adaptation activities. People on street vending, they want guaranteed spaces. I've always said that in the UK, you go, there are days they open for the market. People pay market too. Does the market even get swept? Are the gutters even clean? You went to Tema Station. People pay. We say informal sector, they don't pay. They pay. They pay to the local authority. The AMA guys are harassing them. The people are harassing them, but they don't give them any proper service. There's all kinds of harassment. You know, so we need to really go back to the basics of taking care of our citizens.
Now, if you're a young Ghanaian seeking stable, fulfilling employment, then look no further than the Ghana Grows Program, brought to you by the MasterCard Foundation in collaboration with Springboard Roadshow Foundation and Limehouse. Ghana Grows ignites hope and guides you towards career opportunities in agriculture, agribusiness, technical, and vocational skills. Embrace agric and ATVET careers with Ghana Grows. For more info, call 0308-255-775. Now, is Doomso back? Are you paying too much for electricity?
Yes.
Is your business crumbling because of the high cost of unreliable power? Get a world-class tried and tested solar solution from Translight Solar Limited at very affordable prices. Translight's solar inverters and lithium-ion batteries with the sun work with the sun. Sorry,
lithium-ion batteries.
Lithium-ion batteries work with the sun to provide reliable power at a cheaper cost for your home and business. Call them on 0504-249-229 or 0206-542-454 or visit translightsolar.com. You can send them an email Orhin, O-R-H-I-N-R at translightsolar.com. Wherever there's sunlight, there is
Translight. Now, are you searching for the perfect blend of comfort, convenience, and community? Look no further than Alphabet City, the premium gated community located at Sacramento. Alphabet City has luxurious 2- and 3-bedroom apartments designed to cater for all your needs. Alphabet City provides the best of community amenities and environment to help your children grow. Schedule a tour of your future home by calling 0240-111-119. Alphabet City, the ABC of home sweet home. Continue to save extra 30,000 Ghana cedis when you purchase VW Tijuana All Space. Take advantage now. Drive Ghana, drive Volkswagen. Hurry while stocks last. T's and C's apply. Contact VW Ghana now on 0257956688.
You know, the other point I need to make is yesterday I interviewed Kojo Aponkroma and we're talking about housing. You know, there's no social housing in Ghana.
He
was explaining. So there's social housing. So if you go to South Africa, you have these basic houses.
Yeah.
I remember when I went to Soweto, they showed me basic brick houses and they were now trying to give them DSTVs, which the government builds for people who are very, very poor. So for example, for Kayaye, for street vendors, for waste pickers, you could have housing done for them, which is social housing, very negligible pricing. Then there's affordable housing. Now, affordable housing doesn't exist in Ghana because the researchers have shown us that even at the current market price, an affordable house should be between $10,000 to $15,000. The least you get for an affordable housing in Ghana is $20,000. That's the least. Okay, so we don't have social housing. We don't have affordable housing. We have affordable housing for maybe the middle tier, because the average income earner cannot spend more than 40% of his income on a mortgage. Our mortgage market exists for only the wealthy. All right. So if you are earning $6,000 a year, there's no way you can afford affordable housing, which is $20,000. Do you understand? Because that translates to about $251 a month. $251 a month, what percentage of that would you pay in a mortgage? So mortgage market doesn't exist. Financial sector excludes a lot of this 89%. All right. Transportation. In a lot of countries, transportation has been created for people. So you have either you are a student or you are in a certain category, you have a car that makes it cheaper. We don't have public transport that is state regulated. GAPTI, we don't know what's happening. Ayalolo buses, they are there, but they are not that many. And Metromass. So basically, when people want to travel, they have to depend on the GPRTUs of this world. There are no standards. There's no safety. And the prices are negotiated in this very difficult situation. Food. Food prices, inflation for food is over 35%. Food banks, where, you know, again, I don't want to use UK. It's the only country I've lived in for more than a year. Food is cheaper there. Things, transport is expensive in UK. Housing is expensive, but food is cheap. I could take £10 to a Tesco and buy enough food that will last me for a week. Food is very expensive in Ghana. Healthcare. National Health Insurance Scheme is there. It covers only the basics. I was talking to somebody about hospital. The person said, Charlie, if I go to the hospital, the least I'll pay is 1,005 for the kind of situation I have. So they wait, and they calculate when they go. They use their card. Sometimes you get poorly treated. Education, free SHS is there, is good. We have been told that now there are so many costs in basic education. So what you find is that there's a lot of poor people who go to private schools because there are some, don't forget, transportation is also an issue, and food. So if you live, let's assume you are a single mother who sells oranges in Kasua. Maybe where you live, the closest school is a private school and you pay every day because you can't go to a public school. It may be further. You don't have transportation to give your child. So some of the calculations about which school to go is about even distance. All right. So there must be a geographical assessment of the schools available in poor communities, the quality of teaching, the quality of food the kids get. So if you're going to feed students in school, that's a poverty intervention. And you shouldn't even punish private schools because there are poor people who have kids in private schools. Do you see where I'm going? We've spoken basics. So basics, food, healthcare, education, transportation, housing. These are the basics of life. So many people are excluded. We don't have an inclusive development model. And some of it is the language we use. So
How does the 360 million the IMF give us translate into poverty reduction? We need to ask tougher questions. The ministry must explain to us the link between that tranche we just got, that 350 million. What will it go into? What are the specific programs? How can we track it?
Balance of payment.
Do you get it? We need to shore up. And I agree, Sky. And I'm not downplaying macro. So, for example, you need to shore up the currency, because when the currency depreciates, we all suffer. I get that. But we must always think beyond those numbers into the pass-through effect. What does it mean for the average Ghanaian when we invest in something like NACOP or LEAP or... NAPCO. Or LEAP or these things? How sure are we that the people who are to benefit are benefiting? When we say Ghana Employee, Ghana Enterprise Agency, we are launching Ghana Cares U Obatampa program, and we are supporting people in farming. Where do we, like, what's the link? We must show these things. Don't forget, most of the people said, we don't even know. So it may be happening. So you may have a program which may be happening. You may have an intervention where young people are going to farming. People don't even know about it.
That's true.
You may say you have affordable housing for people in Ashaiman. Only the military workers know. You see, so it's the development is a complicated situation. And I feel we are responsible in a way as well, because we have not interpreted the news well for people to know the real issues. So like this report, I only saw it yesterday on City. Of course, it was released a week or two ago. But they don't get that much discussed. Look at the front pages today. Minister, Saglemi, only has Saglemi go. Otufo said diversify ECG. Alan has done something. What else? Big stories. 89% of your workers are informal employment. Kayaye, street vendors, sellers. Go to La Paz. People are selling. This is the Ghana. We are traders. There aren't that many people in AgriSef. And they are not included in anything. But they bear the brunt of bad decisions. So when you increase taxes, when they go and buy, they pay the price. So when you go and buy a shirt, because the guy at the port pays more, you all pay more. You go and buy food, you all pay more. You go and buy water, you all pay more. Do you get it? So whilst they bear the brunt of the macro, they don't benefit from the positive of the macro, because some middleman is gaining. So he's a farmer. He lives at Kasunya. He may be working hard, but by the time the profit comes, the middlemen have taken all. He doesn't get anything. You see, so we need to find a way of unclogging the system. It's funny how, on the negative side, the poor bear the brunt of it. So fuel price increase. There's no shield for the poor. I bought petrol at 14, almost 15 cedis per liter today. Every poor person will pay the same, whether he takes...
Because it will affect them.
But if the government injects money into the system, or they give a subsidy for fertilizer, even if the food price gets, if the food gets produced, the middleman or the market queen or whoever benefits. So on the negative side, the poor bear the brunt. But on the positive side, the poor don't get it. So the policymaker must also unclog the system, because if we invest money in fertilizer, right, and you are saying you want to make it cheaper for people to make money in farming, how come only the middleman gets the money and the poor guy doesn't get it? But when you increase petrol price, the poor man pays. I'm going to talk to Hassan Abbas Tasunti shortly. Yesterday, 2 days ago, OMCs are now selling goil
14.15
cedis a liter.
15 cedis,
forget it. Somebody was talking about using 15 cedis for a day.
Yeah.
A liter of petrol is 15 cedis. Imagine 15 cedis for a liter of petrol. Sky, a liter. Do you know what 1 liter is? Pure water bottle, you know. Small one. The one Pache sells, the two. That's 1 liter. 15 cedis. Before you now talk about if you live at Kasua and you work in Accra. Transportation money. Meanwhile, we have not invested in the public trains. Long discussing. Public transport. GAPTI. We buy buses. Like, what? Why? We can't even implement. So it's like we are not thinking of the poor. We do things from procurement basis. It's like if you think about the poor, at least make transport affordable. Make food accessible. Housing. All these grandiose announcements. We are not. You see, I always say it starts from the heart before it comes to the head. If you feel for the people, why is the woman working extra? She's working extra because she doesn't want her children to suffer.
Yeah.
That's why she's walking and eating kinky without fish.
Yeah.
She feels for her children. Now, you think if we, the leaders, feel for our people, we will do the kind of things we are doing. So leadership doesn't start from the head. It starts from the heart. Leaders touch a heart before they touch a hand.
So if the people are suffering and our policies are not working, it's because we don't feel for the people. You can, a government that feels for people can do anything it wants. We can allocate resources. Ah, didn't we spend $34 million to move a power plant from Accra to Kumasi? $34 million. Do you know how much it costs to build a hospital? The hospital we built, it was like $1.2 million for the structure. Imagine, you can build 100 of that with the $10 million extra. It's a question of priorities and your care. And we have to raise these points because when we commend them and give them funds for no work done, they get desensitized to the reality. And when we, the media, we choose to focus on the non-essentials and always the fights and the quarrels, we don't get them to... When they listen to us, they must, their conscience must be pricked. They must not listen to us and just laugh. They must. We must show, when you do that CNR report, show the reality that people are still sleeping in front of shops and they are being sexually exploited. Show it. But you follow them around with their mic. Do you get my... So you see how society feels? The people who are supposed to interpret the information also align with those. So we also align with the big guys. And we exploit 89% of our people are informal employment. And as he said, if the thing is 10 cities and you say, member of 5 cities, if you persist on, I will give it to you for 5 because you need transport to go. So when you want to buy, go at 4 p.m. because he knows that he hasn't sold anything. It's 4 o'clock. We'll give it to you. You see where we are going? So there's a vicious cycle of poverty and it's a collective failure. And I don't want to be part of that.
We are part of it.
So what I'm saying, that's what I'm doing, what I'm doing now. Remind yourself that your job is not to just tickle people.
Mm-hmm.
Let policymakers know the far-reaching consequences of bad leadership, mm-hmm. bad economic policy choices. We are in a cost of living crisis in Ghana. Mm-hmm. And let's not use slogans. We cannot sloganeer it away. Mm-hmm. We have to feel for the people and do the things that matter. Not just thinking about votes. Right now, there's a challenge in basic schools. Right? People who supply food, they were not paid for a long time. Mm-hmm. They are reducing their portions. There are a lot of poor parents send their kids to school because of food. If that food thing goes away,
the school enrollment numbers drop.
There should be no way why Minister of Education should be jostling Minister of Finance to pay caterers. Caterers should have number one priority. Do you get it? Why should caterers who cook food for our kids in school have to pick it to be paid? But we have enough money to fly to conferences that don't help anybody. You see the priority issue. When you get into the position, we will help you to mislead because we will not tell you the truth. Because we want to use our personal relationship with you to benefit ourselves. We are not thinking about the reason. We are not there to travel to go to Cambodia for some conference or some meaningless thing. So you are there to make people... Look, somebody came for school fees. We are not sitting on air. Two people came. Fred Duho brought some lady. She's in medical school. It's on school. She didn't have 15,000 cities in the medical... So one guy brought 6,000 by Momo. Another guy brought 11,000. 2 days we paid. That's, you see, you look for problems and solve it. That's when you feel for people. Not this everyday titillating yourself, looking for awards and things. You know? And as we are sitting here, we are in Washington, discussing, yep. What are they discussing?
They are IMF spring meeting. Meetings.
If you're a journalist there, don't worry me doing a KSSM. Translate that spring meeting into a story about poverty reduction and trace the money, whether any money has been spent to reduce poverty. If they claim they are doing pro-poor, push them. Don't go and do big story with fiscal rigidity and unnecessary things. Because at the end of the day, 850,000 people were moved into extreme poverty in the past year and a half. Almost 1 million people. Extreme poverty. And there's something now the Statistical Service calls multidimensional poverty. Poverty is no longer a question of... When I started studying economics, poverty was basically an income issue.
Money, yes.
Now, poverty is not just income. Opportunity, healthcare. It's like you are poor everywhere.
Transport, rent.
It's crazy. So, I mean, multi-dimensional. You see, I like Statistical Service. They are not just churning out the statistics. So they are using their knowledge to tell the story differently. So they are saying now, journalists, don't focus just on poverty. Poverty is not an income issue. It's an opportunity and lifestyle issue. So now in our reportage, we must also look at the multiple dimensions of poverty. 850,000 people move into the poverty bracket. Can you imagine? You know what that means?
It's almost 1 million.
Yes!
1 million people.
And over 80% of the people interviewed said at the beginning of 2023, they were any more than they were at the end of 2023.
Yeah.
I mean,
the script just flipped in 2023.
It's crazy, David.
And the government has failed to come to grips with it. We've said a lot of, and you see, there's something you said many years ago, you know, when I joined the breakfast show, and something you always tell us in the newsroom. Mm. So all these things, what do they mean? Like when the government goes around, and you made a good point, the macro is great for those who understand it, it works for them. But for the average man on the street, all this, inflation has dropped. What does it mean? If he goes to buy K&K, is buying K&K now at 5 cedis when he used to buy it at 3 cedis? For him, that's when you say inflation has dropped, that's not the reality on the ground.
Mm.
If many years ago, I always say this, if 1,000 cedis could fill my tank in the year 2020, and in the year 2024, 1,000 cedis can only fill my tank in 2 weeks or for 2 weeks, that's a problem.
Your purchasing power has
gone. It means that the purchasing power has reduced, and it's for everybody across the table.
Mm.
Salaries have been static. Things are just not adding up. So I'm delighted with this report because it paints the perfect reality for all of us to understand. Hmm. And policymakers should wake up and ask themselves, all these things we do, are the people feeling it, or they are enamored by the large numbers that show up when they go for their campaigns and yeah. Or they think that small number represents all of us. Clearly not. Clearly not. So I hope that somebody will take this report. It's only 16 pages.
Yep.
And it will prick them into thinking deep and hard about Ghanaians and our conditions or how we live these days.
While we are at it, we need to drink some water. And Standard Water has over 25 years of experience in providing quality and refreshing water to quench your thirst. This refreshing water brand is available in 11 regions of Ghana, and we are still expanding to cover the rest of the country. Standard Water gives you the following product offerings: sachet water, bottled water, dispenser mounted jar water, customized water for your parties and other special occasions. Standard Water is available for purchase from supermarkets, retail shops, and sales delivery trucks. For quality water, drink Standard Water. For inquiries and purchases, call 0202-055-703 or 0547-334-385. This advert is FDA approved.
Two stories, and I do my interview. On Tuesday, 16th April, several oil marketing companies implemented price hikes for fuel, marking the second pricing window of the month. Checked by City News at various OMC outlets revealed significant increases in fuel prices. For instance, state-owned GOIL raised the price of petrol from 14.15 Ghana cedis to 14.99 per liter, while diesel rose from 14.74 per liter to 14.80. Similarly, Total Energies now sells petrol at 14.30 and diesel at 14.80 per liter. City Business News confirms a general adherence to the price floors set by the MPA. The MPA initiated the implementation of these price floors for the downstream petroleum sector as outlined in the amended petroleum products pricing guidelines. Initially, the MPA had postponed the implementation of the price floors to the second pricing window of April to engage stakeholders further, following objections from industry players, including energy think tanks like ASEP. These objections contended that the set price floor would not benefit consumers. According to documents obtained by City Business News, the MPA has established an export price floor of 13.02 for petrol and 13.07 for diesel, with liquefied petroleum gas priced at 10.52. This pricing structure will be enforced from April 16 to April 30, 2024. The set price floor mandates that OMCs and LPGs cannot sell their products below these specified prices. So that's a price floor. I want a price ceiling, but they are giving me price floor. A price floor means you can't go below. A price ceiling says you can't go above. We are saying give us a price ceiling. He's giving us a price floor. Second story before my guest talks. Fuel prices will exceed 17 cedis soon. COPEC. Story by Abigail Arthur, City News. Duncan Amua, the Executive Secretary of the Chamber for Petroleum Consumers, COPEC, has predicted that the price of fuel will soon surpass 16 cedis or 17 cedis. This follows Nana Mwesi, the 7th of IES, forecasting a significant rise in fuel prices in the coming weeks during an interview on the City Breakfast Show. Fuel consumers in Ghana are bracing for higher prices as the National Petroleum Authority has decided to revise the suspension of the price stabilization on recovery levy on petroleum products. Background. On April 3, 2024, the MPA issued a directive to stakeholders in the oil marketing distribution sector
instructing them to apply additional charges. 16 pesos per liter for petrol, 14 pesos per liter for diesel, and 40 pesos per liter for LPG. As a result, GOL, the state-owned OMC, revised its prices. As of April 4, petrol and diesel were selling at 14.15 and 14.74. Of course, now it's 14.99 and 14.80. The recent surge in fuel prices represents the largest increase since February 2023, when a liter of fuel was priced at 15.40 and diesel at 15.50. In a conversation with Selom Adonu on Eyewitness News, Mr. Amoa indicated that the trends in international market price and performance of the city suggest an increment in no time. Quote, "We are widely exposed, and the signals as far as international market price movement and the city performance is concerned don't look too good. And sooner than later, fuel will pass 16, 17 cedis in no time," he said. Abbas Tasunti is with the MPA. What is your position there, sir?
So I've, thank you very much. Good morning.
Morning.
I've listened to the stories you've read.
No, what's your? I just want to know your position. Like, so, what are you? What are you there?
Okay, my position at MPA.
Yes.
I'm the head of economic regulation at MPA.
Wonderful. So let's start with the first story we read. The first story said that the OMCs are now charging. It says GOL is going for 14.99 for petrol, 14.80, and it basically talks about the price floor you set. Is that story correct, that you set a price floor that it can't go below? Why do you set a price floor?
Okay, I think that's a good place to start from.
Mm.
So the price floors is one of the recommendations that emanated from the working committee that was put together by the MPA 2 years ago,
mm-hmm,
to review the petroleum pricing deregulation policy, which we did from 2015.
Mm-hmm.
We had implemented this policy for, I think, 7 years at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And a number of issues had come up in the industry, which yesterday we look at the policy and see what we can do to make the industry better to serve consumers. So the price floor was one of the things that was proposed. It was to address issues about price undercutting, particularly if you look at petroleum product prices. You know, we use a formula to determine petroleum product prices, and this formula has fixed costs in there. So you have, for example, if you look at the importer, the BDCs as we commonly call them, their pricing formula takes into consideration the world market price, and then the cost of landing that product from the world market into Ghana, before you pay for other fixed costs like the discharge fees from the vessel, the storage fees that where you keep the product, there are storage fees, there are several port fees, the other fixed costs that all of them incur before they add their own margins and then apply the exchange rate. So since we've implemented the price regulation policy, this price buildup has still been used. So the variations we see in their prices comes from the negotiated premiums they pay to their suppliers to bring the product into Ghana. They all use the same world market price because these benchmarks are used. And then add the fixed costs that I've mentioned. And then the margin as a company, you determine which margin you want to use, because in a deregulated market, we don't determine what margin a company should add. It's competitive. The premiums they pay to the suppliers are also competitive.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to exchange rate, before price regulation, we determine the exchange rate and apply it to one price for all of them. Under the deregulated market, the importers have their own exchange rate. So you go to your banks, you negotiate your rate, and then that's where you apply in setting your prices. Even though the Bank of Ghana is organizing the FX auctions for our industry, the Bank of Ghana is not able to meet 100% of the forex demand of our people. So usually you get up to about around 20%, let me say, of the forex demand. So about 80% of that you have to go to the market. So the BOG rate may be competitive, but that does not give you 100%. So the importers will still use different exchange rates in setting their prices before they sell to the OMCs. For the OMCs too, their price buildup has fixed taxes, levies, and statutory margins, which applies. When they sell the product to the consumer, they pay back all these fixed taxes, levies, back to the GRA and to the appropriate account. For them, their variations also come from the margins they add as players. So the price variations we've seen since price regulation is purely because of the margins they add themselves. And for an industry
so
like ours...
how did you arrive at the price floor then?
Yes, so for an industry like ours, where there are fixed costs that every company applies to their price, when you see price products being sold at certain levels below the fixed cost, then it's a cause for worry. That's where the price and accounting concerns came up. It's a cause for worry because this leads to inability of some of the companies, this we call it unhealthy competition, inability of some of the companies to pay this fixed cost. It leads to debt.
But if consumers benefit, is that not what you are there to do? If somebody is deciding that he's going to get loyalty from his consumers by giving them a low price for a period,
Yeah, I mean, what's wrong with that?
Yeah, you may look at that and say, yes, it's good for the consumer. But this, like I said, MPA's mandate also is to ensure that you have a sustainable industry.
Mm.
Because if the industry collapses and the products cannot be supplied, then there's no product. Availability will be a problem. MPA is supposed to ensure that there's a sustainable industry to assure availability of petroleum products. So where the industry is operating at levels that are not sustainable, then we have to ensure that to prevent such things. So if companies are selling below cost because of unhealthy competition, which is killing them, then, like I mentioned, the control the player has in the price build-up is the margin they set for themselves. So if you negotiate with your supplier and get a better premium, you can pass that on to the consumer. If you want to have a very good margin, you can pass that on to the consumer. So
that.
The price floor, what goes into it is purely the world market price, the benchmark price, which applies to all the companies, and then the fixed cost, which applies to all of them. We leave out the premiums and negotiate with their suppliers to deliver the product to them. Because if I'm better at my negotiating, I pass that on to the consumer.
Let's get that point. Let's go to another point. I think 2 weeks ago, the MPA announced that you were reversing the suspension of the price stabilization recovery levy on petroleum products. My understanding of that levy was that it was inbuilt to help stabilize prices, but it's a levy we pay. And you suspended it temporarily to ease the pressure on consumers. So why did you decide to reverse the suspension? So it means you are bringing it back. Why are you bringing it back?
Okay, so this price stabilization recovery levy is one of the levies in the Energy Sector Levies Act. And this levy has two main purposes. One, the major one is to pay for the subsidies you have on premix fuel. Before it was introduced, governments used to have the challenge of subsidizing products and not being able to pay. So in 2015, when the energy sector levies was brought in, this levy was introduced to ensure that when subsidies are accrued, government has a source of funds to pay them. So this has been one of the major uses of the energy sector levies, the price stabilization recovery levy. And one of the other functions of this levy is it can be used to cushion consumers. So over the years, whenever we monitor the market and we realize the prices are going up on the world market, we make a request to the government that try suspend this levy for a while, because we think that maybe this levy would have amassed or accrued some revenue to be able to pay for the subsidies we have on premix fuel, so that consumers can be relieved of this levy for a while. So this year, if you look at the price on the world market and what's happening on the geopolitical market, and also with the way our exchange rate is behaving, we realize that from the price have been going up, as we have rightly said previously. So we requested for the levy to be suspended for a 3-month period. We were granted that approval. So from the 1st of April, we wrote to the industry to remove that levy from their prices. But a few days later, we were directed that it should be restored. That's a government directive. I can't give the full details as to why we were asked to restore it. So that's why it was.
What I don't understand is how a levy can stabilize price. You're saying you accrue the money, and then when there's a need, you use that money that we pay to then pay subsidies. So those subsidies are supposed to...
So I think it's good you've mentioned this. We've made a request to government that the name of the levy should be looked at, because the price cannot be stabilized as long as it's exposed to external forces like exchange rates. So the name itself, one of the recommendations that the committee I mentioned made was we should change the name of this levy to reflect its use. Because the name is a bit deceptive. If you say price stabilization levy, people assume that you can use to stabilize price. But we will know that there's no way you can stabilize price. The only way you can stabilize the price is to subsidize it and then pay for the subsidy. So we've asked that the name itself should be looked at. And that's one of the changes that have to be made to the name, so that the real name or the real purpose, the name can reflect that.
The last time we looked at the numbers, end of March, early April 2024, prices are the highest since February 2023. What is driving these fuel price increments?
So I think two main factors. If you look at the price build-up, the taxes, levies, and margins have remained the same. They haven't changed over the past 1 year. But then the price on the market have been changing. This is purely attributed to the world market price itself and then the exchange rate. Let's just take, for example, from January this year. The price of petrol, the benchmark price we use, was around $753 per metric ton. As we speak today for this window, it is $937 per metric ton. Same applies to diesel. Diesel was around $782 per metric ton. Today, it is $841 per metric ton. So this price, as they arise on the world market, if the market is deregulated and we are directly paying for what the real cost is and there's no subsidy, they will affect our prices. Exchange rates, I'm sure you know where it's come from January to date. So the changes we see in the price on the market is purely influenced by these two factors, the geopolitical issues and then the geopolitical issues which affect world market prices.
What weight do you apply to world price increase versus exchange rate? Because if you're saying the level of the price on the market,
I'm asking because I have a little knowledge about cocoa. Cocoa prices are hovering around $9,000 per ton. If you go to Ghana, we are earning about $2,600 per ton of cocoa sold, because we sold our cocoa in the futures market. And when the futures market was sold, at the time, the price was very low. So we locked ourselves into $2,600 for a while. So even though the thing's $8,000, $9,000, we are not getting $8,000 for a ton of cocoa. Good. So now you are telling me that world price of petrol is, I don't know, crude or Brent is around 900.
So that's petrol.
It's 900.
Yeah.
But is that the price that we get it today? Or do we not buy it ahead? Is it not the same? Is there not the spot and the futures? Is there not a hedging issue? Do you understand me? Because if cocoa people can say, we will give you $2,600 per ton, even though it's 10,000 on the market, so don't expect a higher producer price of cocoa. How can you are now telling me that as for oil, there's 900, so we should pay more? I won't agree. You get my point?
Yeah.
So explain that point.
So maybe to answer your question, the first question you asked was, what's the weight in terms of the world market price and the exchange rate?
Yes.
So those two factors, the major factor that influence our prices is the exchange rate. The reason is that our exchange rate moves in a certain, we've done analysis over the years, and we notice that the exchange rate moves in a certain direction. Mostly it is going upward. The world market prices rise and fall. So if your exchange rate is always rising and you import in dollars and sell in cedis, then you would expect that your prices move in the same direction as your exchange rate. So we've had prices at around $900 before. This is not the first time. But our exchange rate has moved from, we all know, very low to where they are today. So the price will rise and fall, that's the actual price of the product, will rise and fall in dollars. But if your exchange rate is not stable, then you always have your domestic price. So you are very much exposed to the exchange rate volatility. But in terms of hedging, you can hedge, you can do these hedging strategies. If you are a buyer, you can usually do the call options. But as a government, you do not buy the product yourself to sell to consumers. The market is a private sector-led market. So the buyers themselves can have strategies to protect themselves in terms of how it affects their prices. I mean, their own prices. But if you are not controlling prices, remember government has tried this before. On the crude side, government hedges. So government has put options on the crude side, because the share of government's production of crude oil, they hedge it so that they can get better prices. So if prices go below a certain level, they are not exposed. As consumers, you do the call option so that you protect yourself against high prices. But because you don't government doesn't buy the product itself and sell to consumers, whatever option you do, you are still exposed. Because even for options, for the hedging, you pay money for it. You don't buy product directly, but you go and hedge as a government. You make losses. I mean, we've done this before. It didn't favor the country, so we left it as it is. But those private people who buy, they themselves protect themselves against the market prices. So I can't say right now that government can do anything to hedge the buy side. But for the sell side, which is the crude oil, we know government has strategies at the Ministry of Finance to do that.
So in terms of the weight question, if in June 2022, the CD was selling around the dollar was around 6, and now it's 13. 1 liter on the dollar side may not have changed that much. But because you now need 13 CDs to buy a dollar, you're paying 13 CDs per liter. So it means the exchange rate is a very strong factor.
Yeah, that's very correct.
Good. Now, I don't know if you have all the numbers. Ghana produces crude. I don't know if the crude we produce, we own all of it, but some of it is for us. Some people have said that if you use that crude that you produce, now you have tar and Sentul. Don't sell it on the international market for revenue. Bring it to the refinery in Tema, because it's your own product. Refine it and put it on the market. At least let Goyle sell it. It will make cheaper fuel available for Ghanaians, and possibly the BDCs will think of their business model and find a way of reducing the cost. Has that been discussed enough? Is this feasible, just from an analytical point of view? Because I know that's not your remit. You are not in charge of energy policy. But I want you to explain how the price buildup works, in a sense of, if a country has its own crude and refines it, I mean, from Takoradi to Tema is not far. All right?
Yeah.
And refines it, would it be cheaper? Because there's also cost insurance freight and all those things that the BDCs incur. If you do those economics, we'll refining our own crude make it easier to get cheaper fuel.
So there will be some advantages there. This discussion about if you refine your own crude domestically, whether you have you'll be spared of the price increments on the world market has always come up, especially in Nigeria, for example, where Dangote has just bought the biggest single stream refinery in the world. It's come up and they've explained that every refinery in the world operates on the global market, just like you mentioned cocoa, for example. We produce cocoa here, but we sell at our global prices. So crude oil prices will also always go with the global prices. The advantage we would have gotten here would have been if we were getting 100% of the crude produced in Ghana as owned by government, and we have the capacity in terms of refinery capacity to refine everything here, would have been spared of the freight cost. Because if you have to go and bring the refined products from North West Europe or wherever to Ghana, you pay freight. So at least on the side of freight, you would have been spared to some extent. But they will still sell the crude oil in dollars. They will still sell the refined product in dollars because these refineries, the crude production companies are exposed to, or they are on the global market. They will not sell their do not refine, produce crude and sell it in cities. That's on one side. The other side is that I think you also said we asked whether we own.
Crude belongs to us.
Yes.
So if the Jubilee field produces maybe 30% of that, maybe for Ghana.
That's where I'm coming to actually. Good. So we've done this analysis before because this question has always come up. The crude oil that's produced in Ghana is around 100,000 barrels per day. Yeah, averagely. Ghana's consumption of petroleum product is equivalent to that around that same figure. But we've checked and realized that Ghana owns less than 20% of the crude that's produced in Ghana, which means that if that 20%, if government takes it and says that it will even give it to a refinery here in Ghana to produce, it will still not meet our demand. We'll still have to import close to 80% of what we need.
But can it not reduce the price?
It will play a role.
But because if government owns 20% of the crude and decides that it will refine it at Sentu or Tema Oil Refinery and sell that through Guel, to poorer people. Total, Shell and Co. may also sell, but they will find out that there's a, unless your point around unfair competition comes in. But a country can decide what to sell.
That is not it. So I think you are aware that the crude that is produced is managed by the Ministry of Finance, and the GMPC is the off-taker of that crude.
Yeah.
So they will also look at the value they will get from it. I remember there was a time when GMPC gave its crude oil, the share of government's crude oil to the Tema Oil Refinery to refine. And there were issues that came out of that. So they will always also look at the value for money from their side, because they also have to report to Parliament and government as to how they maximize the profits from that crude. So if you have refining capacity and the refinery will give you the best, the fact that you put crude in a refinery doesn't mean to give you the best yield. If the refinery is not optimized properly, it's not operating at an efficient level, you can put crude in a refinery and still make losses. So just putting it in there is not 100% that you get advantage. So they will look at all of those and make a decision whether should we sell the crude as it is, or should we put it in the refinery and refine it? So if producing everything here gives us the advantage, I'm sure they'll make that decision. Rather than taking it out there to sell that 18% and bring the money back. Because at the end of the day, it is the financial side that they will look at. We are lucky refineries are coming back in Ghana. We have heard so many stories about working on Tema Oil Refinery to bring it back on stream. We now have a new refinery, Akwa Ibom Refinery, which has almost the same capacity as Tema Oil Refinery, a 40,000 barrel per day refinery. The Tema Oil Refinery is 45,000 barrels per day. If these refineries come back and are producing, we are getting to almost 100%, 100,000 barrels per day. And I'm sure if they do the Ministry of Finance and the GMPCs do the economics and they think they can give this crude oil to the local refineries to refine and gives us an advantage.
Yeah.
By deliberately brought in the issue about Dangote, for example, because we are aware NNPC, for example, owns 20% of the has 20% shares in Dangote. Just yesterday, I was having a discussion with someone from Dangote about how this even helps them their domestic price. And they've said that a refinery operates just like any other international refinery. So they'll produce and then sell their products at market prices. And then governments are the ones who take decisions as to whether they would want to subsidize the prices for consumers or not if they have the ability to. So those are purely left for governments to decide.
I'm going back to the price floor because I don't agree with you. So I think MPA exists to do two things. The market must be operated fairly. But the market is not just the producers of the product. The market also includes the consumers, right? Now, I've never heard you announce a price ceiling, but you announce a price floor. Now, you're saying you don't want anti-competitive behavior, so you insist on a price floor because you know the cost buildup. But companies can compete either on the basis of cost or differentiation. This is basic business knowledge. So I can run CTFM better than PCFM because I keep my cost low.
And that's part of my competitive advantage. Now, NCA cannot come and tell me that, City, your costs are too low. Therefore, charge this price for your advert. City can say, well, we have found a way of making it easier to produce morning shows. So our adverts can be cheaper than Peace FM.
So you are right.
So you cannot tell me that there should be a price floor, particularly based on the first point. I mean, the second point is also that the consumer benefits from the price. The consumer benefits from a lower price.
Yeah.
So what's your interest? Why are you telling me that I shouldn't have a price floor? If I want to go lower because I found a way of keeping my cost low, or have a good relationship with a supplier, or I own a vessel, MPA shouldn't be telling us to do a price floor. It's not your business.
So you are right. Yeah, we don't have to control your cost. And that is why in the price floor, that cost component has been left out. It's zero in the price floor. The only factors in the price floor are the fixed cost. Like I said, if you take an OMC's price board up, the taxes they pay to GRE is fixed. They can't say, an OMC cannot say if the price stabilization and recovery level you mentioned, for example, 16 pesos has to be paid. They can't say they will not pay 16 pesos and that they will use 10 pesos. It will be 16 pesos. So all the fixed taxes and levies are in there. But in terms of margins, that's the cost you used for operational cost. We've let that out. In fact, industry is even questioning why we've left the cost out, because they are saying we cannot assume that you operate without a cost. But our argument is that the variations and the differentiations we see in prices because of your variations in cost.
Company so what A is can the fixed say, cost? Because if isn't the cost of the finished product part of the fixed cost?
So yes. So
yeah, but I'm saying that I'm making an argument. If I have a good relationship with my supplier,
mm-hmm.
based on my track record of payment,
mm-hmm.
or based on some ownership relationship, they may give me, I will not transfer pricing, they may give me the crude at a cheaper price.
So you are right. So that's so maybe why is you that? Need to understand the formula well. So if you take the importers price board up, you know we publish what we call the daily price indicators.
Yes.
That's a price benchmark that is used by the BDC. So every window when they are setting their price, that price benchmark is used by all of them.
Yeah.
This $750 and $900 I mentioned there. With daily the window price benchmarks,
mm-hmm.
the variations in the importers buy with these prices, and then the variations come from if you have a good relationship with your supplier, the cost of bringing the products from the source to Ghana will vary, because we've seen contracts from companies and we see somebody can bring it in at $10, another person can bring it in at $50 based on negotiations.
Yes.
So to ensure that the consumer benefits from that variation in cost and that ability of companies to negotiate and get better prices, whether through paying early or being very reliable to their suppliers, and therefore they get those benefits. We've left that component out so that if you were able to even buy at flat, the FOB price, that's a world market price flat, you pass it on. Also, as an importer, you have what we call the BDC margin, because you operate, you have operational costs you incur. We cannot say that we should fix the operational cost at 10 or 20, because you may be doing 5. So to ensure that the consumer still benefits from that has also been left out. They are still arguing that we can't assume that you can't have operational costs, but we don't want to be the one saying that operational cost should be 5 or should be 10. Because once we do that, then we are preventing consumers from enjoying from the benefits of being efficient or having low cost. So those two components, which are variable, have been left out.
But my point is that why are you assuming that everybody's fixed cost is the same?
We have that because this is an industry that has operated for so many years, and it's a formula they used to set their price.
But
this
it's a formula, dynamic market.
Yes, this formula has all this fixed cost in there for everyone. For example, every window we issue the price template for them.
Because
the
somebody
control,
can enter,
the control they have
somebody
is the margins,
see,
which we have left
Abbas,
out.
Somebody can enter a crowded market and compete because they found a way of making their fixed cost lower.
So I've mentioned that the cost. So you see, you are looking at fixed cost in the sense of operational cost.
No,
and that part
why
we've
are
left.
You assuming that I'm making
so
a fixed cost. See, let's use a simple analogy.
Mm-hmm.
Land can be a fixed cost,
mm-hmm.
all right?
Mm-hmm.
Equipment can be a fixed cost.
Mm-hmm.
The price of the raw material can be a fixed cost.
So, Bernard, I think I need to help here. When we talk about fixed cost here, we are not talking about fixed cost for you as an operator, a BDC or an OMC. When you import products, for example, you pay port dues to Ghana Ports and Harbors Authority. That's what we call a fixed cost. There's a service provider called the Ghana Petroleum Mooring Systems. You pay a fee to them to discharge the product.
Yeah.
And then when you put a product in the storage depot, you pay a fee for the storage depot. So an importer, that is not your cost that you can decide I would keep out. So those are the ones we are calling fixed costs.
Because you fix the price about 13.02.
Yes, so that is based on the world market price, the benchmark I mentioned, and the cost like GPMS fee, port dues, storage fees. Those are the ones that have been added.
I understand, but
now,
the world market price,
mm-hmm.
I'm saying that the world market price may be the same for everybody, but people can, through negotiation relationship, get it cheaper.
And that is why we leave out the additional cost, you see, there's a formula for pricing petroleum products in Ghana. So we are not assuming that everyone just comes up with their own price using a different formula. This industry has always operated with the formula. And this formula has this cost in there. That's why we publish the daily price indicators, like I mentioned earlier. And that's what guides the price. If you look at the pricing guidelines, for example, it has always had a benchmark price.
So is the price floor a demand by industry or a regulator rule? Is it the industry price, that's asking you to give them a price floor?
The price floor is a response to the unhealthy competition. So first of all, like I said, when we analyze them...
Unhealthy for who?
When we ask for the industry, in the sense that we have costs back piling up. So this is what's happening. Bernard, companies go and buy products, and OMC goes to buy products from a BDC. We see the price they bought at from the BDC, for example. And then when they put that price in the price formula, that's their extra final price. And the only thing they add is their margin, which is covers their cost of doing business. So that one, from zero to whatever, you can decide to vary your margins, because company A's overhead cost may be higher than company B's overhead cost. Now you see them selling at prices, even if they didn't have a margin at all. Let's say that I'm so efficient, or I even want to be further Christmas, so I'm not putting a cost for myself. The price they sell, because of unhealthy competition, are way lower than what they bought at and adding the taxes. So the question is, how is this company able to even pay the person he bought the product at?
God is still in the miracle business.
But and so as a regulator, we can't say that we can see unhealthy competition going on, but because consumers are enjoying, we should leave it aside. Like I said earlier, if that happens, the industry crumbles, and then there's no availability. So we have to address that.
Historically, problem. Have you also had a price ceiling where you say, no matter what happens, don't go above this price? So has that happened?
So we had that when we were doing the price, before price regulation. So we said what we call the maximum indicative price, where companies cannot sell above.
But you don't do that anymore.
But since we did price regulation, I'm happy you spoke about the competition.
But how can you do price regulation and have a price floor? So the regulation is not... I mean, again, you see, I'm being basic, but you are technical on the oil. Mm-hmm. Basic economics, a deregulated market, the government doesn't control price. So let people sell at the price they want. You say no, they shouldn't sell below a certain price. But you are saying when it comes to higher price, there you are deregulated, so that is not your business.
So Bernard, I'm happy you are saying that.
You are being hypocritical.
No, I'm saying that because you see, when we look at price regulation, look at the context when we did price regulation. When we did price regulation in 2015, what changed? What changed was the fact that the formula that we use has not changed. But when we're regulating price, we set the margins for the BDCs. We set the premium they pay to their supplier.
How is that deregulation?
We determined there? No, that was regulation. That was what we were doing.
Okay, yeah.
So we were doing that. We set the premium they pay to your supplier. The FOB benchmark still remained.
Yeah.
Then we set the premium they pay to your supplier, even though they negotiated that it varied.
Mm-hmm.
And then we set the margin they use. That, we're assuming that all of you use the same cost. So we set the margin for them.
Mm-hmm.
We also apply the same exchange rate for all. And then when it comes to the OMCs, we assume that all of them are buying at the same price from the BDC. So it's offset. And then we also assume their margins are the same when we set that for them as well. When we did price regulation, the things that changed was that premium they negotiated with their suppliers, we left that out. So we say that if Bernard, yours is $20, put 20. If Rich's own is 10, he should put 10. Then he gives, there's competition. The cost that you add, where you said efficiency comes in. Previously, we assume one cost for all. Under price regulation, we leave that out and say, if your cost is lower, you put a lower cost. If it is higher, you use a higher cost. Exchange rate. If you're able to go and get a better exchange rate than Richard, we don't see why we should set one exchange rate for all of you. So you use the rate that gives you advantage. So there has been variations in your price as imported to the OMCs. Now for OMCs too, in the formula, all the taxes and levies are fixed in the formula. Where the variation comes is that previously we set the margin for them. Now we don't do that. We leave it. So that is still there. So the price floor, that's why the price floor excludes these variables that led to means price regulation. So nobody is still setting any margin for any BDC. Nobody is determining the rate a BDC should use.
What you've done is at best partial deregulation.
So, yes, it has been partial deregulation since 2015.
But you're not a politician, so I don't want to push too much. But I feel like the whole deregulation is a sleight of hand the politicians use to take pressure off themselves.
So,
because they politicize fuel prices when in opposition, when they come to government, they can't manage it. Therefore, they came up with this whole hoax that they are doing price deregulation, which is really not true, because
Bernard, you see,
you are saying you are deregulating only the margins. In which business do you regulate margins?
But that's how. No, yeah, so that's, the whole thing that so that was what we're doing. We're doing as regulation. Now,
but you
deregulation,
are not deregulated. You so are deregulation, just partially regulated.
So deregulation that has stopped, and that's why immediately we did price regulation. You saw something happen on our market. Now we see price differentiation. Prior to price regulation, I'm sure you used to buy fuel in 2015. Before June 2015, you would have seen the price the same everywhere. But immediately we did price regulation, now you can see price variation.
But
and that's because they
again, theoretically, the purpose of deregulation
mm-hmm.
is for competitive forces to force prices down.
And the competition is in their cost, like you said.
Yeah, but the prices are not coming down. They've been going up.
But Bernard, whether the exchange rate, like we've discussed already, the prices, these are businessmen. If the exchange rate has gone up, You cannot expect the price to come down.
My point is that the direct, and it is not, I'm not criticizing Abbas, or I'm saying that the policy of deregulation, if you look at the behavior of petroleum prices for the past decade and a half, has not succeeded. It's not really.
But Bernard, the objective of price regulation was not to bring down prices.
It was one.
It was to ensure. It was to ensure that one, the subsidies that government was subsidizing was not able to pay was taken away. That was one.
That's their motive. But what they told us in selling it, you see, this is the thing.
I was part of the committee that worked on the price regulation.
They came on air and said to us that one of the reasons why they were deregulating was that it will force competition. And competition reduces prices. That's what they said to
us. We are having that today. Like you mentioned earlier.
But prices are going
up. The prices are going up because the variables that go into the price. Exchange. When we did price regulation in 2015, what was the exchange rate?
You can't do,
today, the exchange rate is 13.
You can't regulate what you don't control. You don't control the exchange rate.
And that is why the deregulation is actually making you pay for the real price of a consumer petroleum product. Previously, what was happening was the price will rise. The time we're regulating prices, it didn't mean prices were not rising. And that's why they were subsidized.
But my point is that
so the prices rise, but government subsidizes.
Again, I'm not making just a petroleum argument. I'm saying that petroleum is probably the product with the greatest pass-through effect of all products.
Yes, that's true.
It's one of the leading drivers of inflation. Mm-hmm. So for an overall economic policy management, if you don't have a hand on your exchange rate, you are going to destroy your economy. Mm-hmm. So if you come up with this whole, I'm deregulating, you don't even have a price ceiling in a high interest rate environment. You're killing consumers.
So, Bernard, what if you want to do a price ceiling right now, what it means is that in the deregulated market, I have to cap the margin the company can, the cost.
In a regulated market?
If you do that, then we are regulating.
Yes.
And that is why what we have done is not regulating their margins because if...
But regulate it because it's affecting us. Why?
But if I regulate...
Is there any law...
Remember, if you do that, then it means now you are regulating the
price. Yeah, but what's wrong with that?
But if you regulate prices... And the price has to go beyond a certain limit, and you say don't go below it, then beyond it, then you have to subsidize.
No, you don't have
so,
to.
But the,
no,
the
good thing, want to play.
On one hand, you are arguing about the fact that we should allow market forces to determine prices.
I am saying that put the
and that's what we have allowed.
I am saying that inflation is your number one eroder of value in a country.
Mm-hmm.
Exchange rate depreciation is the driver of inflation.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to keep prices stable, and price stability is the object of economic policy management. So if you claim that you want to manage an economy,
mm-hmm.
don't come up with this hoax of deregulation just to take away the political connotation of it.
Maybe, Bernard, we are mixing the issues.
Possibly.
So, we are mixing the issues in the sense that petroleum product pricing deregulation and exchange rate volatility are two different issues.
So they are related.
Yeah, they are related, but they are two different issues. If you look at MPA's mandate is to regulate the petroleum sector.
Mm.
Exchange rate is used to pay for the cost of product.
I understand
it doesn't affect only petroleum.
I'm not saying MPA should regulate.
I'm
talking to government, not to MPA.
Okay.
And I'm not saying MPA should regulate. You see, Sky, I'm making a point.
You see, the
MPA has been the arrowhead for government's economic, government petroleum policy at the downstream level.
Mm-hmm.
And the deregulation was sold for specific reasons.
Exactly.
I'm saying that when you look at...
It would be good to mention those reasons so that we don't mix the
issues. There were many.
No, I can mention them to you because we are very clear about the objective of price regulation.
Give them to
me. One, to ensure that subsidies which were unpaid were addressed because they were leading shortage of petroleum products.
And that's number
two,
one.
Two, because government were fixing the exchange rate for the BDCs. When we use a BOG exchange rate.
Yeah.
Now, use a BOG exchange rate, they sell, and by the time they are buying the dollar,
The
city has depreciated further. And that's what led to the FX losses the BDCs incurred.
Yeah.
So this, and then because of the unpaid subsidies, there were liquidity issues for them.
Yeah.
Because they sell, the product has to be sold at 12 cities, tell them to sell at 10 cities. The two cities will take forever to pay.
Yeah.
It was leading to their inability to pay the banks.
Yeah.
So at a point, we had products sitting at the port. Yeah. The suppliers were not willing to deliver the products to us because the BDCs have not paid them.
Yeah.
So the deregulation came to fix those three issues.
But the
question is, has this responded to those or not? Yes, it has. One. Now, because government is not subsidizing, we don't have an issue of unpaid subsidies. We don't have an issue of FX losses because we don't fix the exchange rate. You use the market rate, so that competition is with you.
Yeah.
The issue of liquidity, has it been addressed? It has been addressed. Yeah. The products that are subsidized today, that's how come in 2015 the SLR was introduced and the price stabilization recovery level was introduced.
Yeah.
So premix, which is still subsidized, unlike previously where you subsidize and you don't have any source of revenue to pay subsidy, the price stabilization recovery level answers that.
So our objective for
price regulation has been achieved.
I'm saying you're speaking from a government and an industry perspective. I'm speaking from a consumer perspective. Mm-hmm. I'm saying that what we were told, in addition to the things you said,
mm-hmm.
was that when there's a deregulated market, it will force competition to make prices come lower. We haven't benefited from that. You are telling me that the lower prices is a result of exchange rate losses.
Let me also make my point.
Okay. And you are not in control of exchange rates.
That's very true.
What you do as government, and you see, when I say government, I'm not talking about MPA alone.
Okay.
So, for example, BOG has a relationship with BDCs, which is not MPA. Mm-hmm. BOD can decide how it gives dollars to who and who it does not. Mm-hmm. I am saying that overall economic policy, whether it's petroleum policy, deregulation policy, should agree to a macro policy that makes people's lives better. Before you came on, I was just reading about cost of living crisis. Inflation is high, food prices are high, transport fares are high. All these things are affecting consumers. So from a consumer perspective, I'm saying deregulation has only delivered for the industry. It hasn't delivered for us.
By the way, shortages. Industry consumers are now, availability has been a big problem.
Not a problem.
You remember last year, Nigeria faced an issue of shortages.
Yeah, but you see, don't use shortages. We are saying that, okay.
But the consumer is interested in availability
If it gets to 20 cities, I may not be able to pay. It can be, you see, there's always availability, accessibility, and affordability. So you see, don't just queue to availability. For power, everything, there are three A's. It must be available, I understand. It must be accessible, I understand. But if available, as I cannot afford it, it's still not there. So the object of any policy, whether it's regulation policy, energy policy, is to make all those three A's. I'm saying, from a consumer perspective, it's not affordable. I can even argue it's not accessible. It's available, but it will be in the tanks. So again, you are here as MPA, so I can't ask you every question. But I also cannot let only, we cannot circumscribe a discussion about petroleum to only MPA. Because there's also petroleum commission.
I agree with you. The exchange rate is a key factor. That's
not my point. So you deal with the issues as it affects to what you regulate. Mm-hmm. And the ones that are beyond your pay grade, you can tell me that, bro, this one is not my decision.
And that's what we do. That's why we leave exchange rate out.
That's exactly what I was trying to come in with. Because you are a technical person sitting here. Your job is not to come and speak to the FX issues, because clearly that's outside your remit.
Mm.
That's a matter that Dr. Baumia would have to be answering the questions for. The Bank of Ghana or the finance minister would have to deal with, or the president himself. But if you stray into that area, then it becomes problematic.
Mm-hmm.
So you stay, of course, the FX issues, it's a big issue.
But I think I admitted that FX affects prices, which you have no control
over. Okay, let's make it nice.
Yes.
What is the MPS recommendation for dealing with a renegade dollar? Is there a way in which, based on your understanding of the way the petroleum sector works, we can shield ourselves from the volatility of FX from the MPA perspective?
I'm happy you brought this in. In 2022, looking at the way how FX affects our industry, previously the Bank of Ghana organizes forex auctions for the whole banking sector.
Thank you.
It doesn't focus on industries.
Mm-hmm.
We went to make a case and said that for the petroleum sector,
wonderful,
looking at the way the petroleum sector affects inflation and every other thing in the country, let's see what we can do to ensure that even though we cannot fix a rate for the petroleum sector, let's have a way where you can provide forex for the petroleum sector so that their rates can be better than what the other industries do. And remember when we were pushing for this, BOG didn't want to do it because in their view, if you do that, the other sectors can also come and make a case that do that. Mm-hmm. And they don't have enough reserves to do that for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
But luckily for us, we were able to convince government to do it. So from 2022, BOG started doing what we call the FX auctions for the oil sector. So the BDCs, every 2 weeks, have a special FX auction that is done for them.
Mm-hmm.
With this FX auction BOG does, it gives them a rate that is better than what they get from the market.
Thank you.
Unfortunate thing is that because BOG does not have enough reserves, they don't get 100% of what they need from BOG. But it's a little bit of support. So if you look at the FX rate that the last auction gave last week, the rate was 13.22. We all know that even spot rates today is above that.
Mm-hmm.
So it gives them some support from there. If BOG was able to give them 100%, we would have been happy about that. What that does is that it gives certainty to pricing. When a BDC has bought in product and has to price in CDs and doesn't know the rate at which he will buy the dollar when he finishes selling, he has to kind of, in a way, speculate.
Super.
So to avoid that speculation, that's why we brought in the FX auctions for the industry. Yeah. We are just praying that we'll get to the point where this FX auction that BOG has initiated for our industry, we'll be able to meet 100% of their rate, so that when BDs are pricing, they have certainty to
two questions, which rate may not necessarily be MPA, but I think I like where you're going. So I want to ask you, has gold for oil helped in stabilizing the exchange rate? If you have the answer, yes. If you don't, I won't push too much. Number two, there's a conversation around increasing what they call the optimal reserve ratio, where when you get gold, you increase your volume of gold as a central bank. Because if you look at the relationship of the gold to the dollar, gold has been stronger.
Mm-hmm.
So then the reserves of the BOG is enough to serve as a buffer to prevent currency depreciation. Was the MPA involved at all in gold for oil? Has there been an analysis of gold for oil in terms of its ability to either stabilize the exchange rate at all, or make it easier to get cheaper products on the market?
Yeah, so gold for oil, I think, you know, it runs on what the BOG calls the gold purchase program.
Mm-hmm.
Previously, BOG buys gold from the gold producers, mm-hmm, and then keeps reserves and liquidates some.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the gold for oil policy was to run on what we call the gold dory.
Mm-hmm.
So these licensed gold exporters, mm-hmm, have to export their gold. Those, mm-hmm, ones didn't used to come to BOG directly.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what the gold for oil policy did was that this gold dory that the licensed gold exporters export on their own and the dollars doesn't come to the BOG reserves, BOG should consolidate, or let me say aggregate that. PMMC does that, the, mm-hmm, Precious Mineral Marketing Company, aggregates that. Now, gold for oil, which Boss is doing, meets about 30% of our forex demands.
Mm.
Previously, they will also come to BOG for dollars to cover this 30% of what they are importing.
Mm.
Now, they don't demand that dollar from G4O, from gold, Bank of Ghana, from its reserves.
Mm-hmm.
So what they do is they use the gold purchase program. And that's why, if you remember last year, the Ministry of Lands and Natural Resources banned the exportation of this gold dory.
Mm-hmm.
So all of this gold dory is brought to the BOG through the PMMC.
Mm-hmm.
And it sells that gold. So they pay them in CDs, mm-hmm, at a certain rate.
Mm-hmm.
So that CD rate is what is used to price the oil that comes through the gold for oil program. So, mm-hmm, this gold dory that has been bought from the licensed gold exporters is liquidated, sold, mm-hmm, outside,
mm-hmm,
and the dollar is used to pay for the oil. So now it has relieved BOG of that pressure of going into its reserves to provide that 30% of oil, the cost of paying for oil from the gold. That's why the BOG governor said that,
mm,
the gold for oil has helped in stabilizing FX to some extent, because, mm, 30% of our, wonderful, oil imports has been taken off there. So even what we've done is that we've even proposed to government that,
mm-hmm,
looking at the advantages this has given BOS through the gold for oil program,
mm-hmm,
let's expand it to cover all our imports, even the private sector imports.
Super.
Because we've been told that there's enough gold dory to cover all our imports. So when this is done, so there have been discussions as to bringing in more gold dory through that process, so that the BDCs can even bring their CDs, because they're not getting 100% of what they need through the BOG auctions. So they bring in their CDs to the gold purchase program.
Super.
The gold is used to sold and then giving dollars given back to them.
Last question. Duncan Amoah, Executive Secretary of SIMBA, is predicting, now we are 14.99, that's what gold is selling petrol, and 14.80. He's predicting that in the coming months, a liter of petrol will sell above 16 CDs. Does MP also do projections like this? Is he speaking the truth? If he is, what can be done to prevent this or to manage it better? So it's a lot of questions in one.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Yeah, so first of all, MP also does projections, because, yeah, even the first projection we do is the daily price indicators we project. The daily price indicators, you know, this is what tells you the direction of prices for the next window.
Mm-hmm.
So as we speak right now, the next window starts on the 1st of May. But, mm-hmm, you've already given the daily price indicators to give an idea of where the world market is going,
mm-hmm,
which influences our prices, because that's the benchmark we use locally.
Mm-hmm.
We've also shown where the exchange rate is going. So just looking at the direction of these two, mm-hmm, it tells you whether price will go up or go down. What MP doesn't do when we do our projections to announce our projections.
Okay.
Because as a regulator, when we announce our projections, it influences the market. In the deregulated, mm-hmm, market, mm-hmm, we don't want to be the one saying price will go to 16 or 17.
Mm-hmm.
And some people may even push their prices there.
Mm-hmm.
So we keep our projections to ourselves. We use that to monitor the market to see whether prices are being computed in response or in conformity with the prescribed petroleum pricing formula. So if anybody knows that prices are going up on the world market and they say the price will go up, it is to go up.
Mm-hmm.
But as which figure it will go to, as someone who is not, first of all, the market is deregulated. So companies can use different margins, like you've said,
mm-hmm,
different costs. So you cannot say the price will be 16 or 17.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't average, mention
average prices.
So averages,
but if the prices continue, will the MPA advise government on what to do in terms of maybe remove some of the taxes or something? Is that within your remit? Are you able to recommend to the political authority? Because you know the effect of the price directly. So if you see the trend going up, are you able to make any recommendations like suspend this levy or that levy so that the price is cushioned? Are you able to do that kind
of thing? So the levy that is used for that is the price stabilization and recovery levy. And that's why we usually make the request for it to be removed. And that's what we did recently.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, we were asked to restore it. So I'm sure government is aware, because we made a case as to why it should be removed. So the decision for government to say we should bring it back until maybe they are okay to say that I can now remove it, we would wait for that directive from government.
Last question from Sky. You said cylinder recirculation model.
Yeah, that's right.
What's the question? How is it going?
So LPG and related issues. There are so many problems in the specific sector we're talking, subsector we're talking about. What is the very latest on the matter? Because there are concerns emerging that it is not going as you actually intended.
Okay, so cylinder recirculation model, as we all know, is a model that has been brought to ensure that we increase access to LPG. currently we have the regular retail outlets mostly located in the urban areas. So if you go to the rural areas, you hardly see any LPG retail outlet there. In my village in Pasa, for example, if you need LPG, you have to travel to Nkonta before you can buy LPG. That's extra cost for the consumer. So in our attempt to ensure that we increase the usage of LPG, first, it's cleaner for the environment. It's also cleaner for you as a consumer. It's also it's easy to use. And also, we increase our consumption. It helps the businesses. So what we've done is that the cylinder recirculation model now brings in the system where the LPG is bottled in cylinders at a bottling plant, automated bottling plant. And these are taken to what we call the cylinder exchange points. These cylinder exchange points is just having a cage and then you have the LPG there. So the consumer, all you come is that also under this model, you don't buy the cylinder. The cylinder is paid for through the model. So as a consumer, all you come is you take the cylinder, you use, you bring back the empty cylinder and you go. So now cylinder exchange points are so cheap to establish. So they can be established in a lot more parts of the country. And also these people don't have to buy cylinders. So getting LPG, so that affordability is one of the tenets of this policy. Access is one of the tenets, and then availability. Availability and access is being done through the CRM. Affordability is something we continue to do. To engage government that CRM LPG want to increase its demand. Currently it's just about 30% national demand. The target is to increase it to 50% at least. So if we do this, then it helps us to. So as we speak, we have four bottling plants. Four bottling plants. One has been built in Kumasi by Gore, and we have three in Tema, which are ready now to start operation. We have already identified stations that are going to start doing the cylinder exchange points. They've been established. We've approved the locations. Now, the value chain requires that, like I mentioned, the bottling plant is a new player in the industry. And in this industry, once you invest, there's a margin or a cost line that you incur. Previously, we didn't use our bottling plant. So once we have bottling plants, there has to be a margin that will pay for the operational cost, because someone has constructed a bottling plant, has to operate it. Just like when you build a filling station, you operate, and therefore OMCs have margins. The bottling plant also needs a margin. Like I said, the cylinder has to be paid for. It has to be paid, so a consumer doesn't have to pay for the cylinder. So the what we have called the cylinder bottling plant margin, cylinder investment margin, has been added to the price of LPG. But obviously, once you do that, it makes LPG price expensive.
So do you still subsidize premix?
Yes, premix is still subsidized.
Yeah, but so
with the LPG. So what we did was, if you just add $80 per metric ton to the price of LPG, it makes it expensive. Yes, it is needed to ensure that the value chain is covered, but we can't leave it that way. So our consumers, because of CRM, have to pay more for LPG. So we have to, NPR, to look at innovative ways of bringing down the cost of LPG, apart from talking to government to reduce the taxes or even remove the tax on LPG, even if you not subsidize it. We introduced what we call the LPG tender, competitive tender system. Previously, the importers will import LPG in smaller quantities on their own, which made it more expensive to import. So from January this year, we changed the approach. We said we consolidate all your quantities to one, and then we tender it. So the company that can deliver at the least premium will deliver it to all of us. Previously, we used to import it around almost $100 per metric ton added to the FOB price. The first tender we did brought it to about $30 per metric ton, which was a huge saving. So that helps us to bring in the cost, that's the $80 cost, so that the consumer is not overburdened, so that we pay more for LPG.
Abbas Tasunti is the head of
economic regulation.
It's a real joy having you on the show. You should do this more often, because MPA ran away from public discourse when he claimed it was deregulating, but somehow you are coming back into the public limelight, and we are very happy with that, and we encourage you and the other colleagues to do more so people can understand what happens in the sector. So thank you for being on the program.
Thank you very much for your time.
You are released. 9:24, Richard, so much to talk about. You know, we read a report. I'm going to read a few text messages.
Yeah, text messages that are
on coming. The on the report on what is called the cost of
the
living
crisis
we are facing.
In the country, yeah.
And then, of course, we did a petroleum price case study with Abbas Tasunti. And we're going to just run into two quick interviews. But if you can read some quick comments from
Yeah, me. Okay. So this one says, Bernard, please ask him what happens to existing cylinders, and with the high prices that urban dwellers are not about to buy food bottle, how will the villagers afford what we buy on the market? And talking about LPG, this one says the MPA and the government are defying all the economics and finance rules that we have learned in school. In finance, government T-bill rate is considered risk-free, but with this government, it's so risky people get haircuts too. They have given MTN an
There's not been haircuts on T-bills. The haircut is on government bonds.
Government bonds.
Let's just be clear.
Okay.
T-bills have not had haircuts.
Okay. They have been given MTN an indirect price floor in the deregulated market. Now, they have given OMCs a price floor in a deregulated market. Why do you give price a deregulated market? Give a price deregulated market. Guys in economics, you cannot undercut the competition and still survive over time. MPA should leave OMCs to do their things. They should just make sure these companies are not selling substandard products to consumers and also ensure that they are paying their taxes to the government. It's coming in from Aqua. Kwesi Akwa from Sakumono. More comments. This one says that, good morning, Bernard and team. Can he ask Abbas? Okay, he's not in the studio. He's been okay, he's been released. Okay. Well, I think we need comments that have to... Yeah. So this one says, Bernard, the MPA's explanation for the apply-for limit is purely anti-competitive. Imagine BOG asking banks to charge and floor rate for their fees. Totally wrong. Abbas should know that businesses can set price lower than market price as part of a market entry strategy and would have factored that into their initial losses.
Okay.
And he goes on to talk about some other things.
Time check 927. A few quick announcements. When we come back, we'll be talking about the Money Summit, which is happening in a few days' time. Mm-hmm. And then we also will be discussing other things.
Secure your ownership in Cowbank today. Increase your shareholding in Cowbank PLC if you're a Cowbank shareholder by taking up your rights in a renounceable rights issue at 0.29 Ghana cedis per share. To do so, visit the website rightsissue.cowbank.net. Update your profile and make payment to take advantage of your rights before the offer ends on April 26, 2024. You may also visit any Cowbank branch to invest. For non-shareholders who wish to become part owners of Cowbank, visit your broker and start the process of becoming a shareholder of Cowbank. Take advantage of this rights issue to increase your shareholding today. Cowbank, forward together.
Now, if you are a young Ghanaian seeking stable and fulfilling employment, the Ghana Growth Program is here for you. It's brought to you by the Mastercard Foundation in collaboration with Springboard Roadshow Foundation and Limehouse. Gain access to career guidance, counseling, and essential skills training in Agric and AT Vet. Call 0308-255-775 to find out more.
If you're dreaming of the perfect sofa to upgrade this year, your dream sofa is now a reality at Latex Foam, introducing our sensational V-Sofa range where comfort meets style at prices that will make your heart skip a beat. Hop into any Latex Foam showroom nationwide to dive into a world of colors and choices. L-shaped V-Sofa, just 3,100. V-Sofa set going for unbeatable 6,500. Hurry, your perfect sofa awaits. Latex Foam, your partner for life.
Now, there's exciting news for everybody out there. You can now get your OmniBasic Visa Classic debit card instantly at any of their branches nationwide. You don't have to wait. Get your contactless and Visa verified card from OmniBasic Bank today. OmniBasic Bank, at your service.
When we come back, we'll be talking about the Money Summit. We read more of your comments. City Breakfast Show is not done yet. Stay with us.
This is the City Breakfast Show, the city's biggest conversation.
Join the conversation on the City Breakfast Show on Facebook at facebook.com/city973, Twitter at twitter.com/city973, and Instagram at instagram.com/city973 with hashtag CityCBS.
So it's 9:32 and the Money Summit is happening this April on the theme Investing for the Future, Rethinking Investment and Savings to Drive Economic Growth and Development. So what is the focus for this year's Money Summit? Who are the key partners? Who are the speakers? What do we expect? From the organizers, the BNFT, Dr. Daniel Nim Prempeh is an economist at BNFT. He's here. Welcome, Doc.
Thank you, Bernard.
Kwabena Santé is a sales and team lead at BNFT. Also, yes. Welcome.
Thank you so much.
And of course, Esteban Kwesi-Mautou is the head of corporate comms at Fidelity Bank. They are the main partners. Esteban, welcome.
Yes. Thank you, Bernard.
Great to have you on the show. Doc, good morning again. Just give me some background. What's this Money Summit? What's the whole Money Summit thing about?
Thank you, Bernard. You know, this is the fourth edition organized by the BFT. This time around, we're looking at investment and savings.
Mm.
Okay. And the rationale is simple. Having gone through a haircut, so to speak, and we've realized based on survey that a lot of people are very pessimistic when it comes to investing or dealing with the financial institutions. And you are an economist, you understand that the heart of every economy is the financial sector, because they mobilize excess liquidity from the public for onward lending to businesses, even as well as government. So anytime there's that kind of doubt or the trust element, you know, it's not there, then you know that there's going to be an issue. So how do we reignite the conversation around investment and savings? Okay, reassuring the community or the country or the citizens, the saving community, that indeed in the means of restructuring, in the means of haircut, look, the financial sector is still vibrant, is still robust, and that trust is there. Okay, so we're creating that platform as a strategic platform for all these critical stakeholders to be able to tell their story better, even the regulator, to be able to reassure citizens that in the midst of the difficulty, the challenges, what went through, the financial sector is still robust and sound and ought to be trusted going forward. And also the international community. Now, look, in the midst of all our macroeconomic challenges, the reforms ongoing, still our economy should be trusted and ought to be trusted. And we're inviting almost all critical stakeholders to invest within the domestic space. So it is a strategic platform giving opportunity for the critical stakeholders, the regulator, and giving all citizens that assurance that indeed all is not lost. There's still hope within the domestic economy. Our financial institutions are still sound and should be trusted in view of investment. Because look, when the citizens are not saving, the financial institutions will not have that excess liquidity to mobilize for onward lending.
All right.
So that is the basic rationale for this year's money summit.
You have some interesting topics. One of your topics, you are talking about accelerating savings and investment climate for sustainable economic growth, which itself is a mouthful. Then you are adding ethical standards and professionalism. I mean, what is all of that? Ethical standards, professionalism, what is all that?
Look, Bernard, the point is that if you recall, even before we've got into the haircut phenomenon saga, so to speak, most of the financial institutions went through some challenges. And one of the things that became visible, it has to do with the corporate governance issues, issues of ethics. So this time around, we are not looking at just the figures from the financial institutions. How ethical is our financial institution? Are they strictly adhering to ethical standards, professionalism, which is key, and trust? Because look, I tell people, it doesn't matter the economic model. If the citizens cannot trust the system, we are doomed. And how would they be able to trust? So it borders down on the people that we employ. The people we employed at the various financial institutions, I'm happy that Fidelity Man is here, ought to exercise a high degree of ethical standards and professionalisms so that we can rest assured that, oh, my CD with Bank X, I can trust that the people who are managing it will ensure that the right things are done for me to get the return on my investment. So that's the rationale.
Now, your second topic is digitalization of money, rethinking financial electronic transactions for economic growth.
Yes, so you know, a recent report released by the IMF indicates that globally the financial sector is there's this cyber threat affecting a lot of people are losing money and data. So we're looking at, once we are moving into the digital space, we should also be discussing how secure in terms of risk management, how in terms of that platform that we have that will be so robust to the extent that people cannot easily hack into the system. Because with the financial sector, data is very sensitive and it's very important. Let's assume that my CD somewhere, anybody can have access to that particular information, and that has become very fatal. So we're looking at cyber security, how sound in terms of employing the necessary technology to ensure. So that's the reason which we add in the
technical. Let me come to Kwabena. So talk to me about the partners and speakers for this year.
All right, thank you so much. For partners, we have Fidelity Bank, we have Leshego, we have Regulus, and then FBN Bank. Media partners, of course, City FM. We have Asasi Radio, Happy FM, and then ETV Ghana.
Wonderful.
Then for the speakers, we have Mr. Ataya Boajan, who is Deputy Managing Director of Fidelity Bank. We have Dr. Richmond Kwame Frimpong, Advisory Board Chair, Financial Literacy Africa. We have Ankit Tandon, Director of FX Sales at Regulus Investment.
Mm.
Then we have Mr. Alan Kwey, who is Head of Retail Banking at FBN Bank.
Mm.
Then Akwesi Edubuahene, Executive Director, Fidelity Securities Limited. And then Eric Kweku Mensah, who is Lead Financial Crimes and Anti-Money Laundering E-Crime Bureau. So we have a huge lineup.
Wonderful.
And then, yes.
So Fidelity is one of your partners. Esteban from Fidelity, tell me about this partnership and why you are excited to be part of it, this the Money Summit.
Yeah, Bernard, so I'm happy that Dr. Enin spoke about the fact that one of the aims is to engender confidence in Ghanaian financial institutions. Fidelity Bank in and of itself is an exemplar of Ghanaian excellence. We're a bank born and bred in Ghana, and our focus has been to drive financial independence among the citizenry. And so this partnership or alignment is more or less a match made in heaven, because we are essentially... With the Money Summit, we're essentially looking at how to drive more awareness about savings and investments and all that it takes for the Ghanaian citizenry to develop an acumen for their finances, right? And this is what Fidelity Bank is about. We want to drive financial independence among the Ghanaian citizenry. You cannot do that without building a culture of savings and investments, not just among the elite in society, but among the rank and mass of the citizenry. And so we find that this ties in with our focus as a brand and an institution. And as a result, we are all in with them and, you know, supporting them to carry out this.
And some of the speakers will be from your bank.
Yes.
So one of your deputy
managing director will speak.
Do you know what he'll be speaking about?
No, he's a keynote speaker.
Oh, he's a keynote speaker.
So that, yes.
For the main summit. Who are the who can attend this event? Who is it for? Who is it meant for?
Just like he indicated, okay. In the let me put it as it. We sampling people in person, we sampling people across the sectors of the economy, from the informal sector, students, business executives, you know, journalists like yourself, etc. But we'll be streaming live in person, is strictly by invitation, okay, because of the capacity of the hall. But we'll be streaming live, giving opportunity to all citizens within and within the jurisdiction of this country to participate. Because the issue of money cut across, just like you said, people, my aunties at Makola, you know, it's very key for them to participate, and then et cetera, et cetera.
I see. So it's Tuesday the 23rd,
yes,
Napalm, but strictly by invitation.
Strictly by invitation.
Wonderful. For inquiries, any number to call? Or the people who are coming, we already know them.
If you want to put out there,
no, I think
okay, you to put
you. All right, yeah. So you can call 0277-791862 for further inquiries.
Can you repeat that?
0277-791862.
Thank you for being on the show. Kwabena Asante is the sales team lead for BNFT. Dr. Daniel Enim Prempeh is the economist with BNFT. And of course, Esteban Kwesi Mautoh, head of corporate communications, Fidelity Bank, who are partnering this impressive media house to come up with the Money Summit. It's happening next week and it's going to be really exciting.
This is the City Breakfast Show. The city's biggest conversation. The City Breakfast Show. Rise above the noise.
Unleashing the power of relevant radio. This is City 97.3.
The City Breakfast Show. Rise above the noise.
Time check, it's 9:45. Before we jump into our next interview, Get Diamond Cement. We've been in this business for 24 years. An amazing brand that puts smiles on the faces of building construction professionals with our affordable 32.5-hour grade cement and our high 42.5-hour as well. Call us on 0540-111978 or 0244-313-368. Diamond Cement, still as hard as a diamond. All right, so the SDGs can be a bit esoteric and boring, but there are people who've come together to make them more exciting and easier for especially children to appreciate. So I have in studio a rep from a group called NNFS Choir, an educational company that provides holistic learning experience with digital teaching. They are rep to authors, writers, and screen fiction writers who have brought the SDGs to life in a series of wonderful publications. So Elvis Klai is the general manager of NNFS Choir Limited. Elvis, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Fui Kantamaklo is a screen and fiction writer who's written books on SDGs. Fui, welcome.
Thank you so much.
And Ofor Mansa, another author, she's also written and produced some of these amazing publications. So welcome as well, Mansa.
Thank you.
So Elvis, tell me about this company of yours and how you brought all of these nice people together.
All right. Thank you very much. So NNFS Choir Limited, as you mentioned, it's an educational company. So what we do is that we produce or publish holistic teaching and learning materials for the Ghanaian schools. So our aim is to make sure that what the learners are having in the classroom, what the teachers are using to teach, are helping grow children who are critical thinkers and problem solvers. So we are also in partnership with Cambridge University Press. We produce books based on the NACA curriculum and other resources. We are also distributors of the UK curriculum books that are EdExcel. They are published by Pearson.
Wonderful.
In UK. So we are also their representatives here in Ghana, and we make these books available to schools that run the UK curriculum.
Super. Yeah. Now, the books we are here to talk about are the Changemaker series.
Yes.
What inspired this Changemaker series? Whose idea was it?
Oh, all right. So I remember one day my director called me to his office and he presented to me some series of books. And he mentioned that the SDGs are usually spoken among government at high levels within organizations, foreigners and stuff. So he said, why don't we bring this to the level of our children? Because they are really the beneficiaries of these goals. Because by 2030, we hope that there will be eradication of poverty and things will be good. So if we bring this to the level of the children, they have knowledge about it. Their awareness are created amongst them. They know the goals and it can help them to also live well. And then they will be beneficiaries in future. If this succeeds, then the children will be beneficiaries. If it fails, then they will also be the victims. So we brought... This inspired us to bring the SDG.
I see. So who brought Mansa and Fui into the conversation?
All right. So when my director presented the books, I think we have had a relationship with Mansa and Fui some months back concerning some of our textbooks in relation to our English books, essential English for primary school. So we linked up with Mansa. We presented the first six series to her, and she brought out this wonderful
just like that
set of 17 books that
amazing.
Are amazing. So,
Mansa, what excited you about the project when you were told to use your writing skills to bring life to the SDGs?
So, it was really food. Like, it started with food. I had been doing some research on food around the time, and when MD, Mr. Francebao, reached out, I was like, I could really write a story about food. So I started reading about the SDGs, did some research, realized Ghanaians were not really publishing on them. And then I went back to him and said, the six books, I can work with four, but let's write 17 to pay homage to the 17.
Wow.
And that was like really audacious because I had not even written like three books all at once before. So then we started having a conversation and put everything together. All 17 books have varied SDG themes, but there are some that are really about food, not just in the eating, but the whole food systems.
I see.
And whilst planning, I thought of Chef Elijah Amuado, who is doing really incredible stuff as a social entrepreneur. And I asked if I could profile him and talk about food, and he said yes. And then there was another book on food fraud.
I see.
So that we talk about the whole ecosystem about food fraud, adulteration, and all of that. And then Fui was already somebody that we already had on board. So I asked if he wanted to, and then he handled four of the books. And that's four how it really started. Yeah.
Because, for listeners, by the way, the SDGs, contrary to the way Mansa is sounding, they are not all about food, actually.
No.
The SDGs are one, no poverty, two, zero hunger, three, good health and well-being, four, quality education, five, gender equality, six, clear water, clean water and sanitation, seven, affordable and clean energy, eight, decent work and economic growth, 9 industrial innovation infrastructure, 10 reducing inequality, 11 sustainable cities and communities, 12
responsible consumption and production 13, climate action 14, life below water 15, life on land 16, peace, justice and wrong situation 17, partnership for the goals. So those are the broad-based areas.
Yeah.
So if we tell me of your own experience being part of this project.
So for me, it's since I've had a nephew very close to me, my kind of my son, I've always wanted to write stories that he would be able to read and tell his friends that, you know, his uncle is a writer. So when this project came, I was excited because I'd already dabbled in like writing for kids. But this was like a sure path to getting like children's books published. And yeah, so I jammed on it and I tackled some of the SDGs that are close to my heart. One of them being climate change. So the climate crisis and then the life underwater. And yeah, so beyond that, it was just like, there was a lot of research in the process, but we were able to come up with very good ideas. And I also had some inspiration from one of the writers, James Dualu, his work. His works from Liberia, yeah.
Let me read portions of one and let listeners guess if they know which SDG is about. So this is titled, Naira Returns to School. Naira loved school. She loved to read. She loved her words. She loved how words created images in her mind. She also learned about different people and places. She made a few friends and had lots of fun. One day, her Mba came home with bad news. Pests had attacked his maize farm. This was the third time. He wouldn't get the maize to sell and make money. Mba told Naira the worst news ever. She would have to stop school. He wouldn't be able to pay her school fees anymore. Naira's brothers, however, would still stay in school. Mba said that her brothers had to continue school because they were boys. He promised that when things got better, she would return to school. Naira sobbed and sobbed. Can you guess where we're going with this guy? Guys? So far we've seen... Okay, let me just read more.
Yeah.
Mba wouldn't change his mind. Mma, which is the mother, begged for Naira, but Mba said they couldn't afford that. There were more changes. They had to let Amuma go. Amuma helped Mma with all the cooking and cleaning in the house. Now Naira would have to do it. Okay. Naira started helping Mma with chores. She cleaned and helped her cook. The boys would get back from school and play until bedtime. When no one was looking, Naira took their books and tried to read, but she was always too tired and ended up dozing off. I see where you're going with this.
SDG 5.
Which is what?
Gender equality.
Yeah, but that's true though.
Yeah, and then also,
but I feel there are other things in there.
There must be quality education, SDG 4.
It's also in there.
Yeah.
There's even climate action.
Yes.
Pests.
Yeah.
So... is that the idea? You sort of mix them. You don't want to.
Yes.
So there's an overriding theme.
Yeah. Yes.
But then there are other layers.
Yes.
Now, how do you work with a child on this? So when they read this book, do you just say, oh, you read a book, what did you learn? Or do you then sort of sit them down and say, by the way, what you've read is an SDG? What's the best way to use this book for a child? Just reading for fun? Or
yes.
What?
So at the back, you see that there's the scoop. So we created a fictional... they are three children, and the idea is for them to, so they either come before the story to kind of anticipate what they're going to read about, or they reflect on the story. And the idea is to, and because it's from a child's point of view, they ask pertinent questions. And so that is kind of an inspiration. So just to backtrack a little bit, I taught undergrad, and one of the best things that I liked teaching English was close reading. So when you read a text, it's not just like after that you're done. You try to like get the different layers. So that's what we try to do, to start conversations. Because the reading of a book is the beginning of a conversation.
Amazing.
The author starts the conversation, the reader responds to it, and then the reader carries it, and that's how. Because every book is the beginning of the conversation, and somebody continues it. Another thing we did was to include activities in every book.
Okay.
So it's either an activity, research, question, just so that it's not the end. Because you can't just present something about, for example, climate action. Like, what should a child do with it? So it's for them to mull over what they've read, to ask questions about it, and then also to think of, can I write something about this? Can I continue this? So that's what we started, an open-ended conversation about the SDGs. Yeah.
This is amazing. This must be a very exciting project. So where can parents get these books? What are you doing around this, beyond this interview? Is there a fair or something?
Yes.
And
yes.
Elvis, do you want to speak to it?
All right, so there is the Changemakers Fair happening this Saturday at the Goethe Institute.
Is that the what?
Goethe Institute at Kunstmuseum.
All right.
So it starts at 1 p.m. to 6 p.m.
All right.
So parents can bring their children. There are going to be fun activities like face paintings. There are going to be coloring works. There are going to be a lot of fun. So when they get there, the books will be outdoored. they can get some for their kids to read.
Wonderful.
And then we can also, at the fair, we'll give them information about outlets where they can get the books after. Mm. It is outdoor on Saturday.
So I'm seeing face painting, coloring wall activity, games, reading, paint, create and sip, recycling activities, fabric collage and more. My concern is, how do you get kids to want to read more? So my kids, you know, I don't know. It's they know they have to read theoretically.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
But somehow they see it's not easy. You know, let's just be honest. They would read, yeah, but it's not like, I don't know.
Okay, so.
So what do we do? How do we get them to read? Not even talk about, I mean, we don't talk about SDG. Just read the normal book.
Yeah.
Jack, and there's a book in the house called Jack, Hey Jack or something. Even that one, we have to bribe them to read it. So talk to me about how to get kids to read better.
Okay, so from my perspective, before Free jumps in, when it comes to kids, because I have nieces and nephews, it's not really just about the text. Sometimes it's about you reading. Mm-hmm. When they see you reading,
forgive.
And one thing that we try to do for some of the books, they were very playful, very playful.
Mm.
Not just the random. We try to be, because I know how my little people are. Sometimes when you are silly, they love it.
Mm.
So some of the stories, we try to be very playful so that they don't think of a text as, because they read textbooks. I mean, they're always, it's
so
always book
should
like,
be fun.
Yes. Book should be fun.
I even give them Tintin comics.
Yeah.
They said English is too old and boring.
Yes.
I think you have to find different ways around it and try not to. So when it comes to texts, a text can be moved in so many directions. So you can even ask, do you want to act it out, you know? Or maybe you try to write an extension of it. You don't believe in this?
Maybe I should just read more. I should just read more. I should pretend to read for them to see.
Honestly, you just be home. Maybe your phone will be in the book.
Wait, Bella, are you reading to them or they should just
see
you
read?
Read to them, read with them, and talk about the text. A text is not just, like, what did you like about this book? And most importantly, what did you not like about it? Because most of the time, we are always focusing on... Because that's how some of us started reading. We read stuff, some of them, we didn't really like it. And I'm like, I'm going to write in my own words. As I'm getting here, it's not representative of me. So I'm going to write it, so for you, you want to...
Yeah, I'll take it from the creator's perspective. So a lot of the books that are out there for kids in Ghana are foreign books. And the few that are out there written by Ghanaians are not very accessible.
Mm.
And so the only time Ghanaian kids experience Ghanaian writing is through textbooks.
Mm-hmm.
And so they associate that with boring. Yeah. And so from the creator's perspective, from the writer's perspective, write for kids. Like, we need more Ghanaians writing for kids about Ghana, not, situating stories outside or anything.
Mm.
And once that happens, once kids are able to relate to what they are reading, in contemporary English also, it shouldn't be like Tintin. I grew up reading Tintin, but nobody would read Tintin nowadays because of exactly what you say. Yeah, the language. But we can have, Ghanaian versions of what Tintin was or what Tintin represented, And so... We need more people in that particular space, which is why I'm very happy that NNF is doing this.
You guys do other books apart from this series? This is your first sort of main... I'm talking about you guys now, the writers.
Oh, yeah. So I write, but I'm trying to write more for kids these days than for...
And by Mansa, you've written other books apart from these? Or these are your first? Okay.
Yeah.
So Saturday the 20th, go to the Goethe Institute with your kids and enjoy the activities there. And there'll be books sold, all kinds of books, particularly these ones. That will help them to just have fun. So thank you, Mansa. Thank you, Elvis.
Thank you so
Clay, who's from NNF Esquire. Very interesting name for a company. NNF Esquire. And then, of course, we can tell my close screen and fiction writer.
Yeah.
Go to the event on Saturday at Goethe Institute and enjoy yourself. That's all we have time for today's edition of the City Breakfast Show. Coming up next is Brunch in the City with Now You Quartet.